on the Fritz.
It's on the Fritz, man. Jiggle the handles.
That's better than Glitch.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, December 5th, 2024. This is your award-winning Kibo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1718.
This is No Agenda.
Defend, depose, deny, and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, right here in FEMA Region Number 6. Good morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where they're shooting the CEOs in New York, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Man, I got to tell you, it's New York is bonkers. They're bonkers. So you know what everyone in New York is posting online?
No.
This guy's a hero.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, when this happened, one of the first things I thought of was a thing I used to say back in the late 90s about some of these big shots should be careful because they could find their heads on a stick.
Yeah.
If the public ever revolted and they would shoot this guy.
And here we are.
I'm thinking, well, this will be interesting to see how this goes.
I mean, they're like, hey, and he even went to Starbucks. That guy is awesome. It's like the new Batman. He took down the elite.
Well, they have pictures of his face now.
Mm-hmm. He looks, and oh, by the way, he's dreamy.
Well,
I'm just telling you what they're saying, man. This is what the kids are saying.
Well, he's got a nice, I see this one picture. He's got a nice smile.
Yeah, but that's what you want. This is the perfect supervillain, even though he's a hero. It is bizarre, but in some ways, maybe not unexpected. I mean,
defend, depose.
Did you hear about this?
Yeah, those are the inscriptions on some of the bullets they found.
Yeah, here, I got a short clip.
Police are calling UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson's death brazen and targeted, saying the killer shot Thompson in the back and the leg before fleeing on a bike and disappearing into Central Park. Thompson's wife now says her husband had been receiving threats before this happened. News Nation's Alex Capriello is live in New York City for us this morning following the latest. Alex, police may have a clue based on the shell casings left at the scene. What more do we know about that?
Yeah, when you take a look at that video, you can see the suspect in this case firing that weapon multiple times. And when that happens, cartridges are automatically ejected from that weapon itself. And on those actual casings, according to New York Police Department sources, they had words that were actually etched into them, specifically defend, depose, and deny. Those are clues potentially onto a possible motive that this shooter might have had. But at this point, New York police are not saying exactly what that motive is. They're still trying to work that out using these as an indication, as well as the other evidence that was left behind, specifically a cell phone in which these police officers have obtained a search warrant to go through and to try to piece together exactly why this 50-year-old CEO was targeted.
This is a very, all of a sudden, I mean, first I heard this yesterday, I'm like, oh, that sucks. I mean, this is no good. Then it took this amazing turns of events. The etchings on the bullet casings, which, I mean, that's obviously a message. We have a cell phone that is left. The guy jumps on a complete trackable city bike. He's hanging out at Starbucks smiling. He's wearing a very obvious gray backpack. He has some kind of weapon that at least he seemed semi-capable. I mean, there's a lot of things going on here. And I immediately, I'm like, I got to, okay, shooter, whatever. Well, everyone's getting all gaga eyes over the dreaminess of this guy. What is the motive? And I found one clip that gives us, I think, four possible motives for this hit.
Well, David, ABC News heard from Brian Thompson's wife a short while ago. In a statement, Paulette Thompson wrote, "We are shattered to hear about the senseless killing of our beloved Brian. Brian was an incredibly loving, generous, talented man who truly lived life to the fullest and touched so many lives. Most importantly, Brian was an incredibly loving father to our two sons and will be greatly missed."
So, from our folks in Minnesota, producers on the ground, the word up there is crime passionnel, especially the statement where she doesn't say he was a great husband. Huh? sketchy. You never know.
Well, that could be reporting too. Oh, you don't know. Course. She didn't say
well,
that.
Well, they had, of course it could, but they had the words on the screen, John, so it must be true. But then there's more.
The company's headquarters are based in Minnesota, and right now flags are flying at half staff outside the building in honor of Thompson. In fact, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota and former vice presidential candidate, addressed Thompson's killing on X, writing, "This is horrifying news and a terrible loss for the business and healthcare community in Minnesota. Minnesota is sending our prayers to Brian's family and the United Healthcare team."
So then you have Walz, and this is where my head went to, okay, so this guy's a CEO, this, and it's coming up in a minute. There was all kinds of DOJ investigations and also Medicaid-related issues. You know, Medicaid has been overbilled by like $9 billion a year. Oh yeah, of course. But these guys, their revenue is $450 billion a year. So a little bit that sticks to the, you know, that sticks to someone else's pocket could be a lot bigger than most other companies. And according to reports, as I have here from the AP, a number of Medicaid-related programs have suffered from fraud and waste under Walz. So just interesting that in this report, we get that coming out, and then we continue.
As for Thompson's career with the company, he became CEO of the nation's largest health insurer, United Healthcare, back in 2021. And before that, he was CEO of United Healthcare's government programs, including Medicare and retirement. But he has been with the company since 2004, when he was hired as a director of corporate development. United Health Group released a statement saying, in part, "Brian was a highly respected colleague and friend to all who work with him. We are working closely with the New York Police Department and ask for your patience and understanding during this difficult time." Now, the Department of Justice has been investigating United Healthcare for antitrust issues, and SEC filings show Thompson and another United Healthcare executive sold millions of dollars in United Healthcare shares in the months before that DOJ investigation became known to investors or to the public. Of course, there is still no word from investigators on any possible motive for today's shooting.
So there's the maybe this was other board members or other people. The guy was, after all, in charge of that division before he became CEO, and they didn't want, you know, dead man can't talk. Maybe that's what's going on.
No, it's always possible.
Do you have any thoughts, or are you just...
Well, I don't think this was a professional hit based on what other people have said.
No, meaning, not professional. No.
So it's a...
But it was a hit. I mean, it was a hit.
I think it's somebody that got screwed by the company.
I think...
And they blamed him, and they went to him, and this guy whose salary, I think, was around $10 million plus a year plus stock.
It was better than podcasting.
Better than podcasting.
Just
and it's, unless you're Joe Rogan.
Yeah, true.
And he, you know, seemed callous and of a sort. And I can see somebody, and this, I think, is something that's going to happen. This is nothing. I think the entire medical establishment is up for grabs when it comes to this sort of thing, which is they have not been serving the public. They've been serving themselves.
I agree. And I think the words defend, depose, deny relates directly to how they are accused of often being very difficult to settle, being very difficult to pay out. And I found an interesting video. I pulled two short clips from the Insurance Watchdog Coalition, who explain United Healthcare and how it works. This is the intro to all the different pieces, because it's not just insurance.
You might know United Health as an insurance company, but it's actually more than that. It's a multinational conglomerate, a vertical monopoly. United Health is the largest for-profit domestic health insurance company. It's gobbled up doctor's offices. 90,000 physicians now work directly for United Health, the largest employer of doctors in the country. United Health owns a dominant pharmacy benefit manager. They decide which medicine you can get and how much you pay for it. United Health operates a software and data company, which helps United Insurance decide how to deny your claims. On top of all this, United Health also owns pharmacies, primary care clinics, surgery centers, urgent care centers, home health agencies, hospice care agencies, and mental health agencies. When you need health care, there's a chance United Health makes money every step of the way. They even own a bank, which allows them to control when, where, and how their doctors get paid. As one report put it, UnitedHealth is pushing to control every piece of patient care outside of the hospital. It's not by accident. Being a sole source single payer monopoly is UnitedHealth's business model.
That's the business model, and here's how it works, how you make up to $450 billion, almost half a trillion dollars a year in revenue.
UnitedHealth set up a company to expand its business from only providing insurance. They even gave it a different name so consumers won't know it's really just UnitedHealth. It's called Optum. Optum employs pharmacy benefit managers and doctors, and they own surgery care centers and urgent care clinics. Let's start with the pharmacy benefits manager, Optum Rx, which is the middleman, controlled by big insurance that sets drug prices. Across the country, independent pharmacies are closing up shop because Optum is underpaying medication reimbursement rates. Optum doesn't just pressure pharmacies to increase their bottom line. They're gouging customers with high prices on life-saving drugs. Here's how it works. Optum will tell you their job is to negotiate drug prices with pharmaceutical companies and work with insurance companies to decide which drugs are covered. But Optum is owned by an insurance company, UnitedHealth. It's negotiating with itself. It sets the price. It sets the profit. Total control.
Yeah, that system's no good.
Yeah, a real
problem with that system. And this also puts that Optum hack from, was it maybe 6 months ago? Puts that into a different light. You remember when all these, a large portion of the medical system was just frozen from some kind of cybersecurity attack, which we really never got the full lowdown on.
And never will.
No, and it might have been ransomware. I mean, this is a mess. This is a mess. And I'm surprised when his wife, we don't know if she said it, but she said there were other threats against his life. So this guy thinks it's a good idea if there's threats against your life as the CEO of a $450 billion revenue company to go tootling out in New York City at 7 a.m. without any security. Man, Joe Rogan's smarter than that. So
Well, at first, you know, somebody was, I noticed somebody, I looked at these comments too, and somebody said, well, that guy's an idiot, didn't have security. And not everybody has to walk around. Every CEO in the world doesn't need security, that's for sure.
But when
you look at it from the perspective of a company that is probably the basis and part and parcel of the entire medical system's corruption.
You might want to protect that guy.
You might want to have more than a couple of guys looking around, talking to their lapels.
But if this is, Occam's razor, if this is someone who's just pissed off about the whole situation, well, this could be the beginning of, seriously, if you look on X and you look on Instagram, people are just like, wow, this guy is good. These guys, it's like the
hero.
Yeah, the little guy. And, he went out there and he killed one of the elites. This could be just the beginning.
If this is the good side of being a lowly podcaster.
Yeah. <Woo! laughs>
This is something you shouldn't have to worry about.
No.
But I can see, but I would say CEO overpaid, especially nowadays where the CEOs are, I would say generally, not all of them, but a lot of them are overpaid to an extreme.
Yeah.
And they are leveraged and they are part of a corrupt system. Have gougers,
and it ruins people's lives.
That have ruined people's lives. I'm surprised this hasn't happened, or isn't happening as we speak for the last 5-6 years.
And your other prediction that soon we'll get some of these kids who are transitioned and are going to wake up and go, what? Where'd that go? And they're going to start getting mad too, and they're going to go after doctors and maybe CEOs. The CEO that's a pretty big message, and that message is clear. It's clear. I mean, how much more clear could you make it with your, what is the sequence again?
Deny, depose, defy. Yeah.
Defend, depose, deny.
Defend.
Defend, depose. So you defend. Yeah,
defend the cases.
Depose deny, everybody.
Deny payment.
No,
and then
no, depose,
a deposition.
Depose.
Depose.
No, depose. It's defend, depose, deny. So defend is like, oh, no, no, no.
Well, there was no order. There were just three random bullets they found on the street.
Oh, I thought that, the three, no, I thought it was in order on each casing.
No, that's not my understanding. No. My understanding that each casing had a word on it.
Really? Oh, that's even more crazy. I was wondering, because a professional hitman doesn't leave casings.
No, that is, well, a professional hitman doesn't do something in public like that either.
And
except in the movies.
Yeah, and what's with the suppressor? I mean, it's New York. The whole thing is bizarre. But yeah, could be the beginning of some citizen revolt.
And there's also
sort.
Three unspent bullets because the gun jammed, and so he's dicking around. I guess three shells fell on the deck too. That's what I understand, at least with some reports.
Yeah, there's all
so there's a three book spent cartridges and three. Now it's possible then that would explain if it was all three words were on all the cartridges, but that doesn't make sense. It's too much work.
Well, and then what's up with getting on a city bike? I mean, this would be the city bike assassin. He's just going around, killing people on city bikes. I mean, it's horrible for him. It's horrible for his family, but it's very interesting from a podcasting perspective.
Oh, from a sociological perspective, this could be a big deal.
Yeah, it could be. So that was just one of the small things that happened.
Yeah, there was another one. I just said, what the hell was it? It was
I don't know. Like Joe Biden pardoned his kid.
What? After saying he wouldn't? Oh no!
This was great. This would put a whole everyone just. I mean, first
of course,
of all,
it was on a show day. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jill. A lot of people immediately say this proves that the real Joe Biden's alive. I say no, it proves nothing.
Well, it doesn't prove anything one way or the other.
No. And, of course, it made for some supercuts. Did you get any? I have some short ones.
You've got it.
Yeah,
I don't think I have any supercuts. The supercuts are always, well, there's two or three of them floating around, and they're all pretty similar.
Yeah, it's all kind of the same.
And there's two forms. One of them, all these left-wing, mostly MSNBC and CNN people defending Biden because he's going to uphold justice and never pardon Hunter.
Yes, he's
and
a good
they
guy.
Make fools of themselves.
Good guy. I mean, he's a good guy. Yeah. So, and then there's the one of Karine Jean-Paul Pierre Abdul-Jabbar.
Let me ask you, will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No.
Well, is there?
I just said no. I just answered.
Would the president pardon or commute his son if he's convicted?
So I've answered this question before. It was asked of me not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and I was very clear and I said no.
And I am satisfied that I'm not going to do anything. I said I abide by the jury decision, and I will do that. And I will not pardon him.
He said several times that the president would not pardon or commute the sentence for his son, Hunter. I just want to make sure that is not going to change over the next 6 months. The president's saying he would not.
It's still a no. It's still a no.
It will always be a no.
It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. And I don't have anything else to add.
No.
Will he pardon his son?
No.
His son, Hunter, is also up for being sentenced next month. Does the president have any intention of pardoning him?
We've been asked that question multiple times. Our answer stands, which is no.
It's no. That's KJP. And then we have another shorty from, I think, some media people.
Let me ask you, will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Is there any possibility?
Is this basically the same thing? Hold on a second.
I said no.
And I am satisfied that I'm not going to do anything. I said I abide by the jury decision, and I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
Several times,
but
the president would not.
No, I thought this was
same
different.
Clip.
It's not the same clip. It's different.
No, it's
but it's
remixed.
Same stuff. Hold on. Where's the nut job?
Our answer stands, which is no.
I'm not gonna get into.
Yeah. Okay. It's all the same, basically. Actually, most of them were either 9 minutes, which was no good,
The 9 minute one is the one I had, and I said,
it's too much.
It was 9 minutes of mostly media people saying, oh, yeah, Joe's a great guy because he's going to not pardon his son. And it was all MSNBC and CNN people, and they were all the same usual suspects, the dipshits that work for those stations that just spew Democrat propaganda points, and they're promoting, you know, they were doing anything to keep Trump from getting elected, which didn't help. No. He got no audience. Well, I think one of the shows, the audience has fallen to 38,000 listeners, viewers.
Wow. We have more trolls in the troll room.
It's pretty pathetic.
Well, here's I'm sorry.
I was just saying it's just like they just keep beating it up, and they were good. The real issue they had was they were gloating and how, you know, fine the president was because nobody was above the law. There's the other theme. They had two themes. Nobody was above the law. Nobody was above the law.
They're switching their tune, and now it's well, it's clear that the Department of Justice is weaponized. It's weaponized against everybody. Here's CBS on the pardon.
Arriving in Angola today, President Biden ignored questions about the pardon of his son. The decision came after the president and his press secretary had spent more than a year claiming a pardon was out of the question.
I said I'd abide by the jury decision.
More supercut.
I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
We've been asked that question multiple times. Our answer stands, which is no.
Notice they don't put the media in their supercuts.
The sweeping nature of the pardon.
No, heaven forbid.
No, can't do that.
And clears the president's son of all crimes he's committed or may have committed over 10 years.
Well, it's unprecedented. No president has ever pardoned their child before.
Pardon expert Jeffrey Crouch says its scope is similar to the clemency Gerald Ford gave Richard Nixon, who resigned amid the Watergate scandal.
It's about as broad as any pardon that I'm aware of. It includes pretty much any potential federal offense, and the way that includes really anything that happens within that particular time range.
The pardon came just a day after President-elect Trump chose Kash Patel to run the FBI, a right-wing operative who's criticized Hunter Biden and vowed to go after Trump's political rivals. The president, in fact, suggested his son would remain a target of the incoming administration, saying there's no reason to believe it will stop here. Enough is enough. But several Democrats today said Biden had gone too far, calling the pardon improper and unwise.
Mm. The crimes are very serious, and this isn't singling out one individual.
Gary Shapley, an IRS investigator who worked on the Hunter Biden tax evasion case, took issue with the president's statement that his son faced prosecution only because he is my son. And that is wrong.
If the Department of Justice truly is fair and treats every individual the same, then there's no way they could have not charged Hunter Biden with committing these acts.
It was quite striking to see several Democratic governors and lawmakers say today that while they understand a father's concern for his son, the president tarnished his legacy and put the interests of his family ahead of the country. They're also worried it could embolden Trump to abuse the same clemency powers once he takes office.
That's amazing.
Remember? Oh, yeah. Now, somehow they turn it on Trump.
Of course. Well, no, they all turned it on Trump.
It's Trump's fault.
NPR. NPR took it to the Nixon Watergate and the Nixon pardon, which I thought was an interesting angle.
I've read that the only comparable pardon with language as sweeping as this was President Gerald Ford's pardon of Nixon. Do you agree with that assessment?
Boy, yo.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and similarly, it's about an instance where we might think about, you know, what might be a politically motivated or a politically concerned kind of prosecution. And if you want to make it blanket to avoid, you know, any possibility that person can still be prosecuted, that's the kind of language you need to use. But what it means is we arrive at today with a really weak record on clemency on his part. So, you know, very few people have received any kind of relief from him. And so it looks like he just singled out his own child, whereas I'm sure there's a lot of parents in America saying, hey, what about my kid? They have a meritorious case, and there's been nothing, and, you know, followed all the rules, filed the petition, but still no ruling. And that, I think, is the problem when it looks you don't have a functioning pardon system for regular people, and it's just people who know somebody.
A functioning pardon system. Hey, he pardoned those two turkeys. I mean, he did that. That was nice.
No, it was three.
Three? Including Hunter.
Bing.
Hey, here's the second piece of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's important to highlight because we often hear about pardons when they are high-profile, controversial individuals, but thousands and thousands of other people who may be worthy of a pardon, whose names most of us have never heard, apply every year, and you're saying, in most cases under the Biden presidency, have been rejected or ignored.
Exactly. And you know, he has a very low grant rate, historically speaking. It's really been mostly symbolic gestures on his part, like the big announcement he had for marijuana, people who had possessed marijuana. You know, that didn't release anybody currently incarcerated. He inherited a backlog of 18,000 petitions when he took office and really just hasn't made a dent. So it's a stark contrast to see the Hunter Biden pardon when you're looking at how the regular process has unfolded during his administration.
Wow. That's NPR?
Yeah.
Well, they won't have her on again.
Well, I mean, they've so, remember just a few months ago, Joe had put country over party by stepping down, and now he's put family over country. It's just getting worse with him. He's going to leave in shame. Will they even give him the helicopter? Don't think so. John Stewart, of course, had a funny bit about it.
Faith in the rule of law. Finally, Democrats have a moral perch from which they can judge without shame, hypocrisy, or nuance.
Breaking news, President Biden has issued a pardon for his son, Hunter Biden.
Mother We were so close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend Jon Stewart's last two Monday shows, which was this last one, this Monday. Just the beginning, because the bits are quite good, well-structured. And then he skipped a week, and then the week before that, he also did another show opening that was, I thought, one of the best he's ever done.
Yeah, what was it?
It was about loopholes, and this one that you saw, this last one was actually part two of the original, which was about rules, loopholes, and norms. Mm. And it's extremely well written.
So now there's reports from Politico. That's WAPO, right? Politico?
No.
Who owns Politico?
Are they still themselves? It's an independent operation, as far as I know.
Biden White House is weighing preemptive pardons for potential Trump targets such as Fauci, Schiff, and Cheney.
Yeah, I don't believe this to be true.
Well, only because Politico said it. Would I mention it when it's in Daily Mail? I'm like, yeah, okay. But everyone's afraid, you know, because of Kash Patel. Kash Patel is going to weaponize the Department of Justice.
Kash Patel.
Kash Patel. Well, I can tell you why they're afraid of Kash Patel. I have a short clip, and he was on, is that Jeremy Ryan's podcast, I think it's Ryan, what his name is. He's some former military guy, has a podcast, and Kash is on there. And this is why Washington is worried. It's pretty much what we said he would be doing.
Then we need to decrease what I call government creep with personnel. The FBI's footprint has gotten so freaking big, and the biggest problem the FBI has had has come out of its intel shops. I'd break that component out of it. I'd shut down the FBI Hoover building on day one and reopening the next day as a museum of the deep state. And I take the 7,000 employees that work in that building and send them across America to chase down criminals. Go be cops. You're cops. Go be cops. Go chase down murderers and rapists and drug dealers and violent offenders. What do you need 7,000 people there for? Same thing with DOJ. What are all these people doing here? Looking for their next government promotion, looking for their next fancy government title.
There you go.
The funny thing about that particular clip is that that the mainstream media, and I think CBS in particular, oh, no, NBC. NBC's the worst right now. Mm-hmm. NBC in particular took that clip and only played, you know, promoting the, I don't have the clip, but promoting the dangers of Kash Patel. Yeah. And they took that clip and took the part where he says, the first thing I would do is shut down the J. Edgar Hoover building. And then they stopped
it right
that.
There. They stop after before the punchline.
Which yeah, no punchlines, no nothing. It's just the
deep state museum,
which implies that he's shutting down the FBI.
Oh man, how lame is that?
NBC has become, you know, they've freaked out about their problems with MSNBC, and they're going to spin all that stuff off.
Yeah,
But it's the master NBC News. The operation at the top is bad.
Yeah. Who runs that? Do we know?
I don't know. Offhand, I don't know.
Of course, Trump took handy advantage of the situation and spun everything around.
Breaking news this evening. Donald Trump now asking a judge in New York to dismiss the verdict in his hush money case. And he is citing the pardon of Hunter Biden this past weekend. Trump's attorneys formally made the request to Judge Juan Merchan, saying the prosecution disrupts the president-elect's transition and threatens to the function of the federal government. They also wrote, quote, as President Biden put it yesterday, enough is enough. This case, which should never have been brought, must now be dismissed. Trump was convicted in May on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records, but Judge Merchan decided last week to indefinitely postpone the sentencing.
That's kind of interesting. Hey, you know, because of that pardon, my case should be dismissed. I'm not quite sure exactly how he...
Well, that was based on the fact that within the pardon structure and what Biden said publicly, it was a commentary about, the Justice Department's corrupt, which really irked the guy that Biden handpicked.
Oh, I see.
Do
that case. Ah, okay. Regarding
it's just basically falling apart.
Yeah. Well, regarding this Fifth Amendment, I got some requests for the constitutional lawyer to weigh in. You know, does indeed the Fifth Amendment no longer apply? Can they have Hunter come in to testify? And he wouldn't need Fifth Amendment protection. To which you, of course, astutely said, "Well, yeah, he can still lie, obviously." And so yes, the constitutional lawyer says, of course, that's always been my understanding. Same thing happens when prosecutors grant immunity to a witness. And then he actually, if you're interested in the show notes, he has all of the Supreme Court case numbers and files, so you can look it up. But then he says something very interesting for a constitutional lawyer. He says, there's one thing you have not considered. Hunter Biden did not kill himself. So that's the thing that we need to be looking at next, according to our constitutional lawyer.
Well, I think that's a long shot. Talked about that before.
Overdose.
Yeah, we talked about that before. That would have happened already, I think. But the point, we had a nasty note that came in was saying our constitutional lawyer was an idiot because he didn't point this out, which is that once you've given this kind of immunity, you are now forced to testify.
No, I don't think that's true. Are you?
No, if you're given immunity, you are forced to testify. You can test. They can subpoena you and make you testify, and you cannot say I have to plead the fifth. That's the point.
Right. But you can still lie. That's
being forced. Being forced to testifying and lying is not the same thing.
No, exactly. With you. I'm on the
same
page.
I'm just saying you can be forced to testify, and you. So what? You can lie. Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the point is you can't prove perjury unless you have enough evidence that you don't need his testimony in the first place, which is the catch-22 of the whole thing.
Well, if they really roll out the evidence, a lot of people are going down. So I don't expect that to happen.
No, of course not.
Because it's just way
too many
people.
They're not going to shrink government either.
Wait, they're not going to close. Cash Patel's not going to close the Hoover building?
I think that may be part of it. That could be part of a bigger plan because there's a lot of there's two things going on in Washington, D.C. right now. There's too many people working there. And then, of course, everybody's working from home. And now they've codified that. So everyone gets to work from home before Trump comes in. So everyone's going to be at home, which, you know, I'd do the same thing if I had the time to pull something like that off, work at home all the time. If you're a government worker.
Well, even Amazon has to come back to the office. Everybody's all upset.
So they have the two. So let's go over these nominations. I have a couple of clips. I have Trump. I think this is the Trump nomination appointments. Trump appointments. Let's play that to get a rundown.
President-elect Donald Trump announced several more picks for his administration today. NTD's Washington correspondent Jack Bradley joins us live from outside of Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Palm Beach, Florida. Good evening, Jack. President-elect Trump made quite a few picks this morning, but who are some of the more notable nominees?
Good evening, Tiffany. Well, they're just rolling in. As far as the most notable ones, Peter Navarro is picked to serve as the senior counselor for trade and manufacturing. Navarro served as the senior trade advisor during Trump's first term. He's a staunch advocate for tariffs, especially when it comes to tariffs on China. Remember, that was what the Biden administration left in place when Trump left office back in 2021. Trump said on Truth Social that the new role, quote, leverages Peter's broad range of White House experience while harnessing his extensive policy, analytic, and media skills. Navarro served a four-month prison sentence that ended in July. That's because he was convicted for refusing to appear before the House Select Committee on January 6th for the Capitol breach. We also have Paul Atkins, who is nominated for the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission here. Atkins formerly served as the SEC commissioner, and he's expected to take a more crypto-friendly approach here and push fewer regulations under Trump than the previous SEC chair. Trump wrote, quote, Atkins believes in the promise of robust, innovative capital markets and are responsive to the needs of investors and that provide capital to make our economy the best in the world. Now, Trump also tapped Jared Isaacman for the head of NASA, a $26 billion budget there. Isaacman is a billionaire CEO and astronaut. He's flown to space twice. He's accepted the nomination this morning, posting on X, quote, Americans will walk on the moon and Mars, and in doing so, we will make life better here on Earth. And just in, former Congressman Billy Long of Missouri has just been tapped to head the IRS.
Oh, I love those. Let's get to Mars. It'll make it better here. Why don't we fix here?
I have to play a clip from Billy Long in front of the testimony he gave. He was doing some in Congress. He's a congressman.
So this is the new IRS guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's an auctioneer.
Hey, dollar bill. One of those guys?
Billy Long, play the clip.
So one other thing, being an auctioneer in Congress, the way our debt is running out of control, they find it very handy to have Jeff Duncan and myself here in Washington. We are one of the few people that can actually keep up with the national debt. I'm going to tell you, dude, $2 trillion, now $3, $3 trillion, now $4 trillion, $5 trillion, $6 trillion, $6 trillion, $7 trillion, $7 trillion,
$8 trillion,
$8 trillion, $9 trillion, $10 trillion, $11 trillion, here, $12 trillion, $13 trillion, you're out of here, $13 trillion, $14 trillion, now $15 trillion, I have sold at $14 trillion. Thankfully, Mr. Speaker, we also can say those numbers backwards, so when we get the spending under control here, I'll be back.
Well, that'll be entertaining. That's good.
He's apparently gone into this shtick.
I love it.
When people were in some hearing, they were protesting, and he'd just go into it.
That's funny.
You couldn't hear him.
That's funny.
So he's a funny guy. So that's a plus. Now the other guy they didn't talk about, the new guys, because this is Hegseth, who they're just going after.
Well, this to me is purely military industrial complex, doesn't want any outsider in there, and they're doing everything they can, pulling out all the stops, every single chit, every card they have. This guy cannot get in, and I have no doubt that there will be a lot of Republican senators who won't affirm him because they're all on the take from the military industrial complex. There's no way.
You really think so? Holy mackerel.
Gambling
Are
going
you
on?
Cynical or what?
Yeah, I'm very cynical.
Let's play this clip. This is attacking Hegseth on NPR.
Oh, boy.
President-elect Donald Trump's pick to lead the pandemic.
Wait a minute. Is that NPR also sponsored by Archer Daniel Midlands and those guys? Is that NPR?
Yeah, it's sponsored by the military-industrial complex Burlington Northern.
There you go.
President-elect Donald Trump's pick to lead the Pentagon is battling accusations of sexual misconduct and heavy drinking. A former colleague at Fox News.
Isn't that a requirement for show business? And B for politics? I mean, heavy drinking.
Well, I would think especially at the Pentagon.
Yeah, come on, people.
And heavy drinking. A former colleague at Fox News tells NPR that Pete Hegseth made unwelcome physical advances while inebriated on multiple occasions.
That's how it works in television. You show up. J.J., Oh, JJ at MTV. He would come rolling in around 7:30 in the morning, still hungover, had the company car out all night. They called him the franchise. He roll in with a couple of chicks and like, hey, let's do some segments. That's entertainment.
More from NPR's David Folkenflik.
The former colleague tells NPR that Hegseth once even groped her bottom at a Manhattan bar.
No.
It's not to be identified for fear of retribution. Hegseth came to prominence as the host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Hegseth's attorney, Timothy Palitori, called the allegation a false claim. Through a spokesperson, Fox tells NPR that it had not received complaints about that accusation. On Tuesday, NBC reported that 10 current and former Fox colleagues allege Hegseth drank alcohol to excess. Palitori said that had been debunked by allies at Fox who have stepped forward to defend his name. In 2018, Hegseth's mother privately denounced her son's behavior. This morning, she appeared on Fox and Friends to try and help him save his nomination.
Yeah, that was
David Folkenflik.
That was a rotten thing to do, publishing that mom's letter. That was rotten. That's really low.
It was very low. How did they get the letter?
Well, you don't know.
This was my theory, which I produced in the newsletter. If people would just subscribe, I don't know why the newsletter shouldn't have twice as many subscribers.
It's that good, people. It's that good,
don't you think?
Yeah, I love the newsletter. Not only they love you, the newsletter, you, everything. I did the morning show Wednesday. Matt Long, our guy who loves you, who reads the newsletter, and he shows up in front of the studio. What does he have? He has a plastic bag with four persimmons.
Oh, good man.
Two that were completely ripe and ready to go, which are so squishy, and two that I have to keep in the bag for like 3 weeks or whatever. People love your newsletter, love your tips. They love you, John.
Well, I feel loved.
Yeah, you should.
Well, the point I was making was the newsletter had this point, which is that it had to be, the DOD has access to NSA's computers.
Yes.
Somebody went in there with, we talked about this was some years ago, and there was a big scandal because these FBI guys would just go in there and make these searches of all the databases, which everybody's email is in there.
They were consultants. They weren't even FBI, they were consultants. And we know from Edward Snowden, all you need is the email address and up pops it up the last 5 days or whatever, 5 weeks of your emails and everything else. Yeah, of course.
So they go in there and they dig up this email from mom and then slip it to the New York Times. The New York Times, with no qualms, publishes this personal email of somebody that was obviously stolen. And then they make a big fuss. The old lady's got to go on one of the Fox shows to defend herself, saying she was just irked by, it was one of those nasty. I mean, if they pulled the emails out between you and me, they'd make it look like we're going to kill each other.
Especially yours. Wait. There are lots of people who have emails like that from you. It's not just me. Everybody has those. But unfortunately, for some reason in politics, and politics media, it's two sides of the same coin. It used to only be America. Now, increasingly, it's other countries. It always comes down to the penis. It's this is a horrible man because he has a penis and he does stuff and he's an adulterer. And it's never about policy, never about capability, never about experience. And now they've added drinking to it. It's just, it's sick. It's
heavy
sick.
Drinker. It's I sick. Love it.
It's sick. It's so incredible. And it works, people go, he's a drinker.
You don't want a drunk there.
Squeeze their butt. And of course, now we have, this is, who is this report from? This is about Hegseth. This is France 24. They add the latest twist to these nominations.
There's widespread speculation here in the U.S. that Donald Trump may be rethinking his nominee for his Secretary of Defense in his cabinet. Pete Hegseth, best known as the anchor for Fox News Weekends, is the man that Donald Trump has tipped to leads the Department of Defense, but there's been skepticism over his qualifications for the job, and now allegations of sexual misconduct as well as excessive drinking and financial troubles are financial also plaguing troubles. His candidacy.
But who doesn't have financial troubles?
We are told by numerous sources, and it's been widely reported in various media outlets in the United States, that Donald Trump has been having conversations with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis as recently as Tuesday about being in the role, and also about the potential appointment of Lara Trump, Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, to the vacant Senate seat vacated by Marco Rubio's nomination. Well, of course, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is a man who ran against Donald Trump in the primaries of this election. That is something which has been held against him by some Republicans, and Donald Trump has had a bit of a contentious past with him. He's called him Meatball Ron in the past, but apparently the two men are getting on well, and there is now belief that he could be in the running for the Secretary of Defense role. As it stands, Pete Hegseth is still not backing down, saying that he believes he still has a path forward. He said to some reporters on the Hill on Wednesday, I spoke to the president-elect this morning. He said, keep going, keep fighting. I'm behind you all the way. Why would I back down? But of course, he needs to be confirmed by the Senate in order to get into that cabinet position. Whether Donald Trump is willing to expend the political capital to get him there is the question that everybody is asking.
Oh, I can hear. No, everyone's talking about Pete Hegseth clenching a woman's butt and drinking before showtime. And they're all like, oh, please don't look at me.
He drank after showtime. He wasn't one of those guys who drank. The show that he did was a morning show.
Yeah.
Drinking at 8.
Well, so financial troubles. Oh,
so I think the Trump had, you know, Hegseth has to get to the hearings because
he's got a lot to say.
Well, besides having a lot to say, they have to see who the weak sisters are in the Senate and the Republican side.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They got to smoke them out.
You have to identify them.
Got to smoke them out.
You got to smoke them out, and then you can, you know, go after them politically later, or have the public do it, or whatever you want to do. But these senators have got to be smoked out. Because
it's not going to be too hard. You just look at the AIPAC donations, which, unlike the popular opinion online, comes from the American Israeli Education Fund, which is where the military-industrial complex donates to. You know, it's not the Jews, everybody. Simmer down. But yeah, I mean, just look at the donations. Look at the campaign finances. You can see exactly who's going to vote against him. I think we could probably do a pool. It'd be easy to see. But is DeSantis, is he compromised enough to do to be Secretary of Defense? Do you think that he's a guy that could muster? Stomach,
I think
maybe?
They got the goods on him because he was at Gitmo during the torture period.
Right, right. They got the goods on him. Yeah, Hegseth is too good of an American. That's the problem. A good soldier, you know, brave man. He's too good. He's too good for that corrupt outfit.
Yeah, DeSantis would be a better fit for them.
Yeah, well, that's
he talks a big game. He's a good big game talker.
Yeah,
so he can he'd make it look like something's happening, but it's not going to happen. More likely, Cash Patel's the guy who can kick some ass if they get him, and he's going to be the tougher one on the system.
I was listening to NPR the other day on the media. I didn't clip it, but his whole rise, Patel's rise, is quite interesting. Where they it started really early, and he was like just a lawyer, and he was defending some low level case, and he came into the court, and he had to fly from Tajikistan or something, and they didn't have a tie for him, and then the judge just reamed him for not having a tie, and then he got this whole thing, the system's corrupt, and then he got in with Nunes, and then Nunes promised him that when the time came, he'd be put on the National Security Council. So he had this interesting rise in really from nothing.
Nunes is his mentor.
Yeah. So I like Cash Patel. I think he's going to be fun, but he's the wild card. People are afraid of him. And where's the dirt? Does he not have a drinking problem?
Well, not yet.
And then, of course, back to consumerism. You know, Trump, he's going to do it, man. It's going to be tariffs. It's going to be horrible. You know what that means when tariffs are coming. It's time to buy now for Christmas.
Holiday shoppers might be wondering what tech products they should buy in case President-elect Trump's proposed tariffs go into effect.
Yeah, a recent analysis from the Consumer Technology Association suggests smartphone prices could.
How come you're not a member of the Consumer Technology Association? That seems like
I never heard of it. I know there's the Consumer Electronics Association, which is a major, major operation. I've never heard of the consumer technology. I think they made a mistake.
I think we should be on it. If it exists,
we should be on it.
The nation suggests smartphone prices could rise by 26%.
Oh, no, my smartphone.
Due to proposed tariffs on imports from China.
Smartphone is going to go up in price?
Which manufactures the majority of our smartphones. You should also consider replacing your household appliance. That may be on the fritz. According to the National Retail Federation.
Hey, do you have any household appliances that may be on the fritz?
Well, there's a phrase that we need to bring back.
That's a good one. I agree.
It's on the fritz.
It's on the fritz, man. Jiggle the handles.
That's better than glitch.
That may be on the fritz. According to the National Retail Federation, the tariffs could cause the price of the average appliance to go up by nearly 20%. Other products that will cost more include gaming consoles and laptops. And already this morning, breaking news, China just announced minutes ago that it's banning exports of high-tech materials to the U.S. That includes materials like gallium, germanium, and antimony, materials used in several products like your cell phone battery. Ooh. So it has begun in a lot of ways.
It has begun.
Most definitely by the upcoming administration.
Most definitely.
We're going to see the impact for sure.
By now. So, but this is Biden. Biden put some more sanctions on, didn't he? Wasn't this a Biden move that Trump is now going to have to pick up?
I have no idea what
there's some new
Biden did something.
Somebody did something. I don't want to say it's Biden. Yeah, some new chip thing, like new tariffs on chips, or you can't sell certain chips to China. There was something new, and that's why they retaliated with the gallium, which I'd never even heard of. What is gallium?
Used in semiconductors, especially specialty ones. I think if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this, but I think it's used in things that require high frequencies. Mm. Gallium's got some characteristics that make it workable.
Mm. Well, it's all part of the China move. We're really starting to move in on China. And the reason Biden was in Africa, Angola, I don't think it got a lot of play. I only got one clip, but I didn't even know that this was taking place. But this is a pure anti-China move.
U.S. President Joe Biden on his first trip to sub-Saharan Africa. The visit this week is meant to solidify economic ties with the African nation, even as the Biden administration prepares for a transition to Trump's presidency.
So this is the president's final trip. And with it, he wants to kind of leave a legacy marker for improving relations with Africa at a time when China and Russia have deep ties across the continent. China especially has been incredibly strategic in terms of developing these relationships, inviting the heads of state to China. And the image of the United States in some of these smaller and lower income countries has also taken a hit because of the close ties between the U.S. and Israel. And so one of the Biden administration's big investments in 4 years abroad has been pumping millions of dollars into this new rail corridor that they hope by the end of the decade will stretch from one end of the continent to the other. And that will be a major way that some of the critical minerals that are produced in Africa are brought out to the United States. And so Biden was here to take a look at part of that project and optimism that even in a Trump administration, that project will continue because it muscles away some of the infrastructure investment that China wants to do in Africa.
This is the Trans-Africa Corridor connecting Central Africa's Copper Belt to the Angolan coast. I hadn't heard about this.
I haven't either, actually.
And it's $600 billion. Oh, that's new financing. That's new money. So I don't know how much was already there. But yeah, this is so this is our, and this is really, I mean, that's a real, a big middle finger to China. They're the train guys. Hey, what are you doing? We do trains around
we're
here.
We're the train guys.
We do trains around here. What are you doing, Biden? So I thought that was rather interesting. And they're just doing everything they can to.
I wonder why that information, because the way it was presented, first you had Biden bumbling around and calling Angola a city, and they had all these ludicrous clips of him stumbling and mumbling. That's, and it was great. Like, even the mainstream couldn't play a good clip.
Yeah.
And then the background was that, well, he was either went to Angola to avoid talking about Hunter's pardon, or he went there just to give him $1 billion for no good reason because of climate. It was right. a climate change visit.
Angle to it, yeah.
They never mentioned anything about this rail.
I wonder
which
what
is actually a good story. So what do you think? Why do you think that was suppressed over the climate change angle in so far as the mainstream media is
because
concerned?
There's no money for people in America? Maybe. And who knows? The 600...
I think if you're a resentful American and you go over and you hear that they're throwing money at Africa because of climate worries, as opposed to throwing money at Africa so they can make a train that drives a bunch of minerals out of the country over to us, I don't think there's a comparison there. One is good, one is bad.
It just depends where your money's coming from.
But if it's all coming from us, it doesn't matter if it's good, if the result is good, as opposed to throwing it away because of climate change.
I can't.
That was the point they made it over and over about this. This climate. I probably have a clip too.
I wonder, by the way, what do you think an African foamer sounds like when he sees that train go by?
Woo! Oh my God!
I can't wait. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's got to be there.
I have so they're just throwing gold bars overboard at this point. It's like wherever we can throw some money. Let's throw some money. So of course Ukraine, we need to get as much out there. Or I think what is Jake Sullivan here called the National Security Advisor, surge of weapons.
What are you telling your Ukrainian counterparts about American support in 51 days after Biden leaves office?
Well, first, what I'm saying is we are going to do everything in our power for these 50 days to get Ukraine all the tools we possibly can to strengthen their position on the battlefield so that they'll be stronger at the negotiating table. And President Biden directed me to oversee.
This is a key talking point. Get them all that we can so they'll be stronger at the negotiating table. This thing is over. This thing is ending. Everybody knows it. And it's just, how do they do it? Who gets left over with the spoils? This is where they're at. And it's just, throw that money at it. It doesn't even make sense. Like, if we send $7 billion more dollars, then he'll be stronger at the negotiating table. I don't see how it makes sense. But this is the talking point.
The tools we possibly can to strengthen their position on the battlefield so that they'll be stronger at the negotiating table. And President Biden directed me to oversee a massive surge in the military equipment that we are delivering to Ukraine so that we have spent every dollar that Congress has appropriated to us by the time that President Biden leaves office. That's first and foremost what we're focused on. And then I've encouraged the Ukrainian team to engage the incoming team as well as to engage all of our allies and partners because, again, on January 21st, the war in Ukraine doesn't just go away. Obviously, the new team will have its own policy, its own approach, and I can't speak to that. But what I can do is make sure that we put Ukraine in the best possible position when we hand off the baton.
Okay. I mean, is this paying everybody off or, listen.
Ah, you got it. You nailed it.
Don't make waves. We're going to pay everybody off.
This is money laundering.
And that kind of fits in with our boy Mark Rutte. Mark Rutte going to tell you what we're doing, what we can and cannot do with NATO regarding Ukraine.
Ukraine's foreign minister went to Brussels with two asks, more air defenses and an invitation for his country to join NATO. The latter, he says, is the only real guarantee of security in the face of Russian aggression.
And now is the true time of
geopolitical certainty. And we need this certainty. We need strong decisions to strengthen us, to strengthen our capacities.
But leading his first of these meetings as Secretary General, Mark Rutte was quick to push the question of membership aside.
I would argue, let's not have all these discussions step by step on what a peace process might look like. Yes. Make sure that Ukraine has what it needs to get to a position of strength, when those peace talks start.
Oh, the strength when the peace talks start. So it's starting soon.
Meaning it is a request which seems unlikely right now. With the US awaiting a change in leadership come January and Germany facing elections a month later, the pair fear such a request could drag NATO into a war with Russia.
We share the concern that Mark expressed for Ukraine in this ongoing aggression, but that only reinforces our determination to make sure that Ukraine has what it needs to deal with what it's facing on the battlefield.
The alliance says anything other than a strong Ukraine risks emboldening others contemplating a similar path of aggression. Aside from Ukraine, meetings in the building behind me will address other threats to NATO members. Cyber attacks, infrastructure sabotage, energy blackmail, as well as threats from pro-Russian political parties in countries like Georgia, Romania and Bulgaria.
Ah, Bulgaria next on the list. We haven't heard them kick up yet. We have Romania and Georgia. By the way, how far is Ferndale from where you live?
Ferndale?
Yeah.
Isn't Ferndale in Southern California?
No, it's supposed to be Humboldt County.
Oh, that's some. Humboldt County is nowhere near here.
Oh, okay, because everyone's texting me and I've got.
I'd say it's about 200 miles.
No,
at least 100 miles.
I'm getting text messages. Everyone's concerned. They can't believe you're alive.
What's going on in Ferndale?
A 7.0 magnitude earthquake has struck off the coast of Northern California. Tsunami warning has been issued.
That's nowhere near here.
Grab your floaties.
I mean, if it was a 7.0, which is a pretty strong quake, and I didn't feel it.
Yeah, that's why I find it rather questionable.
It's too far away.
Questionable. Okay. Well, tsunami warning.
I'm not expecting that either.
It's breaking news. Breaking news. I'm glad you're safe. Stay safe.
Stay safe.
You know, part of this is, it's money laundering. It's money to pay off the military-industrial complex. Okay, boys, we got a little period here. We're all going to chill out. We're going to give some of our contacts over in Ukraine some money. We're winding it down. Trump is obviously going to... By the way, did you see that Tucker Carlson is going to Russia again, and now he's going to interview Sergei Lavrov?
Yep.
I think this is a fantastic development.
Why?
Because Lavrov speaks perfect English. So it'll be a much more comfortable... His English is good. It'll be a much more comfortable interview. And, you know, Tucker's going to go over there and Lavrov can put out whatever he wants and everybody's going to watch it.
Ferndale's 293 miles away.
Stop waxing your surfboard. No tsunami for you.
That's a long way.
Anyway, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what messages Lavrov is going to send to us.
Oh, yeah. Well, that will be good.
Yeah.
Because he definitely has things to... He's a good one of those guys who likes to drop little tidbits that you can interpret one way or the other. And he's got the ear. I mean, he is Putin.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And meanwhile, the Palantir CEO... that guy is weird. You ever looked at that guy?
I'm glad you... No, I like the use of your word, though.
Yeah, well, he is. He's actually capital W. Have you not seen this guy with the curly hair, the floppy hair that's flying all over the place?
No, let me look him up.
You got to look him up. He's a very odd duck. Hold on a second. Palantir.
What's his name?
I'm going to look it up for you. The Alex Karp. Alex Karp. Where does he come from?
I mean, C-A-R-P-P or C-A-R-P?
K-A-R-P. So what is his... Stanford. Right? Isn't this exactly the kind of...
He's got a mop head. He's a goofy looking guy. He never combs his hair. It's grayish. It's CIA-ish, but it's unkempt.
Yeah, but this is a very big military contractor. You know, they and for all intents and purposes, I don't like Palantir. They don't seem like a good company. They're, you know, who knows where they are in. They're in all kinds of systems. And, you know, this, by the way, is part of the, what's the name? The PayPal mafia guy who got J.D. Vance into the senator seat, supposedly.
Yeah, this is, what's his name's buddy, or his major Peter investment
Thiel.
Is...
Peter Thiel.
Yeah, Thiel.
Yeah. Thiel. He's like, this war's not over.
It's very hard to know what's going to happen, but you have an adversary who is zero-sum. If Putin goes home and says, hey, we lost, he will lose his life, his friends will lose their life, they'll lose all their money. And he'll go to his grave feeling that he lost, which he does not want to do. We in the West, most of us in the West, correctly believe if we allow these kind of things to happen, if we allow people to violate the sovereignty of a land and rape, pillage, and destroy people who are innocent in that land, that this will set a horrible precedent. So we can't allow that to happen. Also, we've shown that we develop superior technology, and combined with heroes on the ground, we can actually win. And so this is just still a class of culture.
Really? Really, mop head guy? He's like, oh, no, it's still going on. I mean, the heroes on the ground with our technology, they can win. They can beat Russia. Is he not read
so
in?
This guy co-founded Palantir.
Mm-hmm. But he's the CEO. Yeah,
he's not as spook, it looks like, but he looks.
He looks like the data guy.
Spook adjacent.
He looks like the data guy. I invented it all. I'm the database man.
Karp is a critic of short sellers and said he loves burning the short sellers. Oh, it's because of his stock.
Mm.
He has compared them to cocaine addicts and says they just love pulling down great American companies.
No, so far his stock is doing just
Karp
fine.
Has described himself as a socialist and a progressive and says he voted for Hillary Clinton.
No wonder he's not in the group. Oh, no, man. Well, he must have the goods on everybody. I don't know. It's odd. So... did you by any chance see...
he's a warmonger, if you look at this, his background. Look at Wiki. People should look him up on Wiki.
He's a progressive. He's a progressive. Of course. Yeah. He's a progressive. So I had a thought the other day. I watched the entire 2.5 hours of Mike Benz on Joe Rogan. Did you happen to see any of that?
No, I did not. Thank you. But I knew you would, and I'm waiting to hear your analysis.
Well, I did ask Tina. I said, could you just please listen to this episode? And she had, because she was driving to San Antonio, and she texts me within 10 minutes, says, I can't listen to this. And she can listen to almost anything. Said, this guy, he's just like, he has diarrhea of the mouth. I don't know what he's talking about. He's jumping around. I have no clue. This was, I think Joe said, if he said 50 words in this entire episode, it was a lot. And it was just like the mic, it was so convoluted. I have a minute and a half. Just a needle drop, just so you kind of get the idea of how he jumps around. This is something we know a little bit about, but just listen to a needle drop of what this entire 2.5 hours was like.
This is basically the month before the Bob Mueller investigation, and they wanted to pre-censor and throttle Trump's ability to be able to fight off charges that he was a Russian asset. Because at the time, the Pentagon and the intelligence community want him out. If you remember, the Ukraine impeachment in 2019 came from Sia Morella, the CIA agent, came from the Vindman brothers, who were the military. Basically, Trump had a big beef with the existing brass of the Pentagon and the intelligence community over Russia policy, over Eurasia policy, which is a whole thing that we can maybe talk about if you're interested. But so the Atlantic Council was one of the very, very, very first movers in the censorship industry space. I mentioned how this really started in 2014 with 25 years of free speech diplomacy sort of ended with the 2014 Ukraine fiasco because of this Gerasimov doctrine, hybrid warfare thing. And I mentioned that that's when NATO began setting down infrastructure just to censor the internet. And that's what snowballed into what we now have. And so the Atlantic Council effectively bills itself as NATO's think tank. That's what it's known as in Washington. You know, there's... the places like the Council on Foreign Relations are sort of more known for Chamber of Commerce and big business sort of working on government policy. The Atlantic Council is one of these that's for NATO, and it's basically NATO's clandestine civilian, sort of civil military arm.
So you can understand that most mere mortals listen to this and go, what is he talking about? You know, they probably got left behind at Trump's impeachment. Okay, I'm there. And then it's the 2014 Atlantic Council and the Council on Foreign Relations. So he's all over the map. And to most people, just boring. I found it very interesting because he knows a lot and he's very well. He calls, this is my North Star. But he's, all he talks about is censorship, censorship, censorship. It's only about censorship. And then how, you know, the all these different groups, USAID and the State Department's Global Engagement Center, and how they were making the tech company censor. And it's, that's all he talks about is censorship. And what I realized at the end of this, and Joe Rogan literally said, I have to go back and listen to this episode two more times to understand what you just said. So I don't think many people got it. But what he didn't talk about is propaganda. And he never mentions, and this was telling to me, never mentioned Smith-Mundt, the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which was 2012.
But he, I would suggest that perhaps he assumes that you, everyone knows about this, and he just overlooked it.
No, it sounds like he was jamming everything he could into this. There's no reason for him to, oops, I assumed you knew about this. No. And by the way, most of these ex-military, and he's not military, but he was State Department, whatever. Right. I don't care. He has a foundation for defending freedom online. There's no Form 990. You can't donate to it. I don't know how the guy makes money. I don't care. But his job is to tell Joe Rogan about all the censorship. And as I started to think about it, because all of his stories kind of start in 2012, this is exactly when the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012 came into play as part of the National Defense Authorization Act. And maybe we just need to just remind people what this was. And it was specifically that, well, here it is, amends the United States Information Educational Exchange Act of 1984, which means you can't propagandize Americans, to authorize the Secretary of State and the Broadcasting Board of Governors, that is Tucker Carlson's dad, to provide for the preparation and dissemination of information intended for foreign audiences abroad about the United States, including about its people, its history, the federal government policies, through press, publications, radio, motion pictures, the internet, and other information media, including social media. And then through information centers and instructors. And it says, basically, you can now do this in America. And as I was thinking about it, and so I'm already off Mike Benz, right? So Mike Benz, he's trying to focus everybody on censorship. Do you remember one of the big social media experiments that took place in 2012 that we were shaking our head at? Like, where is this coming from?
Well, not offhand.
Kony 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Kony 2012
yeah.
was the first
100 billion views
overnight. And everybody, oh, Kony 2012 was about some African warlord who was using children. And the guy who was running it later went nuts and was running around naked on top of parked cars at a motel. I mean,
right. Bath salts or whatever that was at the time, well, the other trend.
Or whatever they did to him, because yeah. I'm just realizing this was an experiment. This was one of the first, let's see if we can get a video to go viral. We didn't have TikTok, you know, but this is well
after YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. But this, and it was YouTube, but this was another fine Google outfit. This was well after social networks had already kind of come alive. And so what, and I'm just kind of associating free association in my head. I got, oh, I remember John used to say that the internet just made their job easier to propagandize everybody, which is true. I mean, you know, they were doing it through magazines and newspapers and television. And, you know, so now they, oh, these military guys, you know, now that Smith-Mundt is out of the way, it was in the National Defense Authorization Act for a reason. And now we can just do all kinds of propaganda. So the same day that I'm looking at this, Jonathan Haidt comes out with an article. And Jonathan Haidt is the guy who wrote The Coddling of the American Mind about, you know, how we've turned out all these wussies. I'm paraphrasing his book. And he has this article, and he says, and they did all this, they got this Pew research, they got all this data, and the title of this article is Why the Mental Health of Liberal Girls Sank First and Fastest. And I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, oh, so because that's your TikToks right there. They're all liberal girls and women, and they're going nuts. And they're out of control.
They're out of control.
So I'm reading this, and their conclusion is there's three great untruths that they have, that these women have come to believe, here they are. They are fragile and can be harmed by books, speakers, words, which are forms of violence. They came to believe that their emotions, especially their anxieties, were reliable guides to reality. And they came to see society as comprised of victims and oppressors, good people and bad people. But their conclusion is that every single one of these girls, and it was much less prevalent on conservative boys and girls, probably because they're doing Bible study, whatever else, but it still went up for them as well, was that every single one of them, when asked the question in the survey, has a doctor or other healthcare provider ever told you that you may have a mental condition, a mental health condition? All of them said yes. So I'm thinking there's two things that may have been going on since 2012. One, that we may be under some big DARPA experiment, and they've been noodling in our minds with a sewer pipe into our brains for years, for over a decade, just seeing what would happen. Well, what if we tweak this? And you don't need the collaboration of the social media for that. You can just get the data by, you know, from ad buys information, so you can target exactly who you want. All of these, what I call number nicks, you know, the people on X who are telling you you're no good and you're a Zionist. They all have a name with a long number. You know, this to me is not a real person, or it's someone maybe in the Global Engagement Center. And then the second thought I had is if you are the pharmaceutical industry, and this really started on Tumblr, this is what you do. You go in there and you make all these girls all worried that they have mental health issues, and you confirm that continuously on Reddit and everywhere else they go, and you just continuously confirm, affirm. And I think that we've been under several massive, forget the censorship, we have been under attack by multiple organizations. And that this is what has led to people like Leslie Jones talking like this on a podcast with Gavin Newsom, of all people.
To me, I just feel like all the shit is being revealed now. Trump brought out all those people who really are racist. Because most white people are, they just don't understand that they have that microaggression. Y'all mostly are. You don't even understand some of the racist shit you do. Mm. And by accident, just from being a white entitled motherfucker. Mm. Seriously. And that shit's starting to show now. Mm. And it's getting so bad. Like, oh, we don't want you to see your history and all of that. I think people are just waking up to the shit that's been going on. And now we're waking up.
So this is Leslie Jones of Saturday Night Live, of Ghostbusters failed movie. And Gavin Newsom helps her self-diagnose where this came from.
What do you think? I mean, do you think there's this current sort of more the extreme of what you're just saying, and sort of distillation in the last few years, I sense in particular, was a reaction to George Floyd? It was sort of a reaction,
right,
sort of in that sort of COVID framework? I mean, this is sort of a boomerang that really exposes it at a whole nother level.
Yeah, I think that COVID fucked us up. I think that when we had that pandemic and was inside for a little while, I think that some of us lost our fucking mind. And I think, again, Gavin, I just think it's sadness. We're sad. Mm. We don't understand what's going on with our government. Our government is supposed to be boring. You know what I'm saying? We're not supposed to turn on the TV every day and see child molesters and felons and shit in our government. We're supposed to be like, those are the most boring motherfuckers, and we don't give a fuck. Like, no one, everyone's frustrated because now this is happening and we never understood the system.
So this is a very, very troubled, very broken and sad person. And I think this is what happened. This is, you know, during COVID, everybody's online. They struck. They went out and they just collected souls, man. And you know what? Blue Cry, I would say people have to be very, very careful on that Blue Cry outfit, because that's going to be the next target. They're going to make them nuts, all of them. And then what's going to happen on X? That's just going to be, it's going to be the same. It's going to be Tumblr will be Blue Cry and 4chan will be X. And there's propaganda going on both sides. And the end result is Oxford's word of the year.
Brain rot. You have it. I have it. Yes. It's the Oxford word of the year for 2024. Allow me to define it. Quote, supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as a result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content considered to be trivial or unchallenging. You could use it in two ways. You could say, as you may say about this very video you're watching on your phone, that's brain rot.
Yes.
Or you can say, that video gave me brain rot. Two ways.
It's all very relatable.
I get it.
All
yeah.
have it. Yeah.
So it's the word of the year.
It's the word of the year. First used by Waldo Emerson.
No.
Oh. No. Thoreau?
Thoreau.
The brain rot is getting me. It's killing me.
Literally
the guy who wrote Walden's Pond or Walden, yeah, went to the pond, he first used
Thoreau,
it in
yeah.
reference. It would be Thoreau.
Thoreau.
Yeah.
Of course, it would be Thoreau, as yeah. I recall. He first used it in the 1800s. It's back. It's the word of the year. I clearly
and
suffer
it makes
from
sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
So everyone's got brain rot. And the only people who are semi-normal are the ones that just stay off of it. Or at least don't use it in an app formation like you do. Although, you know, you could easily be susceptible to it. I think we've been under attack for over a decade and we didn't even realize it. And we all focus on no censorship. But meanwhile, they're just pushing messages all day long from the military, from pharma, and maybe from others.
Well, I think your analysis is good until you get to the brain rot.
I had to wrap it up. I didn't have anything else. I tried to.
I don't think you have a conclusion to this.
I don't have proof. This is, I'm throwing it out. I'm throwing it out that, and so what I want.
It's a thesis.
It's a thesis. It's a
classic thesis. In other words, you suggest something is going on. It could be, and the methodologies, which would include Benz and these people, these a group of people that are all part of the experiment. And the reason you emphasize censorship because you don't want them to stop. And doing it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want people to think about what's really going on.
No, you don't want them to stop. I mean, if you have censorship, then somebody could put a stop to the experiment.
Oh, that's another good point. That's very good. I didn't even consider that one. And I look at this Blue Sky outfit where everyone's rushed over there and they have all these things like,
well, you have to assume that the fact that they rushed over the way they did, especially after the CNN report that showed that what happened to Twitter was it got balanced.
Yeah.
It's not a bunch of right wingers.
Yes.
There was a very carefully done report showing it used to be like 56% Democrats, 40 something percent Republicans. Now it's like 48 Democrats, 47 Republicans, still more Democrats than Republicans, but balanced.
Right.
And this seems to have people upset, especially when it's brought up even on CNN.
Yeah. But this is also where, you know, I just can't help thinking about how the military has been feeding certain women who we know all this nonsense about the grids going down. There won't be an election that propagates out through their social media accounts. It just seems like one big experiment to me.
It could be.
And the Kony 2012 is the giveaway.
Kony 2012 is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
Because that did trigger, it did show that something could, that you could make people. But then again, it had no fundamental change. It made no fundamental change. All it did was it got attention.
Yeah.
and people would propagate the nonsense that this guy was, you know, some sort of a screwball African guy that was using kids to shoot people. And it was a big deal. You had to stop him. But well, there was no, it didn't change anybody's vote. It didn't make you want to do something. It didn't make you want to buy something. The whole thing was just it was almost like a wheel spinning experiment to see if you could get people to, you know, screech their tires. It didn't really accomplish anything that I can think of.
I think it was just to see how a video going viral would get news. I just pulled this just out of the hat. Coney 2012, CBS.
Head of the U.S. Africa Command says the five-year hunt for warlord Joseph Kony is ending. Kony and his militia have terrorized Central Africa for...
No, I'm looking for the big... Oh, Clooney was involved in that. You remember that? Clooney got involved. Clooney.
I'd like indicted war criminals to enjoy the same level of celebrity as me.
Yeah, and then we had Rihanna.
And for to get the youth involved with something like that.
Angelina Jolie.
I don't think I know anybody that doesn't hate Joseph Kony. And anybody who works in the international field has been aware.
That was a whole group of them. But the whole point was to get attention for something that didn't matter. So anyway, be on the lookout, people.
Well, Clooney's an interesting case. You know, Clooney is the executive producer of this new show, The Agency.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Have you seen it?
Oh, you'll want to see it. It's I don't think that everyone's going to like this show. It's a spook show, and it reveals some trade craft that's interesting.
Hmm.
But Clooney is the guy behind it. It's actually a stolen show. The show was taken from a show in France that went for five seasons called Le Bureau de l'Agent. And that show, I ended up watching the Agency, and then I watched the French show, one episode. It's almost a scene by scene lift.
Yeah.
Every single scene, except a couple of changes were made to the American show. For example, the spy who's played by Michael Fassbender, who's quite good. That was the French version of it. The guy was in Syria, and he had to break off with this relationship so he could be moved back to Langley. The French one, of course, is for the French intelligence.
Yes.
And the girl was a pretty Syrian girl, white. The American version, the woman is a black girl. So it has to be an African.
Of course. You had to make got to do that.
Those kinds of changes are throughout.
I'm surprised Leslie Jones wasn't up for the role. She would have been perfect.
So there's nomenclature changes and some other things, but the script is almost word for word and scene by scene. I called Brunetti about this, saying, this is like plagiarism as far as I'm concerned. And he said, in Hollywood, he says, you bring in the same team that did the original show as part of the...
So they get paid.
So they get their money, and they can't sue for plagiarism because they're suing themselves. And he says, I said to him, well, you know, this, like, this, the dialogue is like, the writers just took the French and, you know, and made it English. It was the same. Everything's the same, shot by shot.
Hmm.
And he says, writers are lazy. If you can do that, that's what you do. He says, why fix something that's not broken? You know, he's just a Hollywood guy. He also has some comments about our show. He wants to make a change, which we'll discuss at some point. We'll discuss after the show.
We're gonna take advice from Hollywood now?
Well, we took advice on one of the things that he wants. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, yeah. It'll be good. I'm surprised he already hasn't called you because he likes the back channel.
Oh, yeah. That's the Hollywood way, man. Man, we know how those guys operate. Good. Hey, so, man, how you doing?
If you want to watch the Bureau, you can get that. I think it was on Netflix, and I think it's around here and there. You can pick it up and see what the show is about. But the American version is only released two, and it's really, I think it's a good spook show. It's creepy, and it's got all the elements you want. It's a little, I think, for the general public, it's a little slow moving. But
when it comes to Clooney,
George Clooney. George Clooney. George Clooney is a spy. And I'm not implementing any of Brunetti's ideas until he gives you a bit part in something.
He says he's never going to do another film.
Oh, okay. All right. Can we write that down? No, can we write that down? December 5th, 2024. Happy Sinterklaas, by the way, to our Dutch audience.
Is today the day?
Yeah, today's the day. He comes and puts something in the little kid's wooden shoes with his Black Pete. There wasn't much. I didn't hear much controversy this year about the Black Pete. They probably have Rainbow Petes now, so there's no more Black Petes.
Oh, you should look into that.
No,
every year it's been, for the last decade we've been
bitching and moaning
about this Black Pete character. Yeah,
but they achieved the objective. The objective was for the Dutch to admit that they're a bunch of racist slave holders and slave transporters, and they gave all this money to Suriname and Indonesia and opened up a museum. They buckled, so they got paid, and then all of a sudden, oh, it stops. That was the whole point. Remember, there was that United Nations lady who was leading that every year? I don't know if you remember that, but...
No, I don't.
Yeah, it was a pressure campaign, and they buckled, of course.
Yeah, it was for money.
Yeah, here's my bike. Whatever. Take my bike. Take my bike.
There's still a huge collection of them, I guess, somewhere.
I do have one other thing, if you want to hear something about Trump and... well, first of all, I'm sure you heard about... Trump's threat to BRICS, which I have a short clip here.
Donald Trump is threatening to impose tariffs on so-called BRICS nations. What's he actually said there?
Yeah, over the weekend he said that those nations would face 100% tariffs if they pushed ahead with plans that have been floated, perhaps those nations should become less reliant in global trade on the U.S. dollar. Now, those nations include very strong trading partners with the U.S. It's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And Donald Trump saying he wants a commitment from the BRICS nations that they have no intention of launching their own currency or of becoming less reliant on the U.S. dollar.
So Trump is obviously on the warpath, and he wants everybody to use dollars. And I've been trying to figure out when he said, you know, Bitcoin is like the new oil. And he said that at Bitcoin 2024, and you know, he's all in on crypto, and he's going to make the Bitcoin strategic reserve. And of course, he was out there going, "Hey, you like your Bitcoin now?" As it broke $100,000 of Bitcoin. I found this interview from this guy Luke Gromen. He's been on CNBC, and he's around. He's one of these financial guys, you know, what he has a FFTT or whatever his outfit is called. And he had a really quite an interesting take on why Trump said that. And because I've been trying to figure out the stable coins, how that works with the T-bills and everything, and how, because Trump is not just going to say, "Oh, well, Bitcoin's great," because arguably it would be bad for the dollar. And it didn't make a lot of sense. But he's a macro guy, and I think he might be onto something. Listen to this. I got this from Jupiter Broadcasting, my buddy Chris over there, who found this interview.
What I laid out for clients 3 weeks ago was a sort of a thought process, is how I started to think about it. It changed the way I was thinking about this Bitcoin is the new oil comment from Trump, which is, if we go back in time to late 73, early 74, oil rose in price by 400% from October 73 to April 74. And there is an interview that was given on CNN International by the former Saudi oil minister, Sheikh Yamani, in 2010, in which he said there was a meeting of Bilderberg Group at this Swedish island in late 73, October 73. Henry Kissinger attended and said, "Look, the price of oil is going up 400%. Get on board." And it happened. And again, these are not my words. These are the words of the former Saudi oil minister on CNN 14 years ago. He highlighted that. And the point of the U.S. doing that was essentially to make the oil market big enough to back U.S. deficits, to basically recycle the flows back into U.S. debt to basically fix the U.S. fiscal problem post-Vietnam War and after we left the gold standard. It basically put us on an oil standard of sorts.
Does that sound right to you? Because I don't know the history of that. Does that jive with what you know?
No, I can't say. I don't know for sure, but it doesn't. There's nothing he said that doesn't make sense.
So here's how he connects it to Bitcoin being the new oil with the stable coins. Because remember, Trump said, "I love your Bitcoin and your stable coins," and all the Bitcoin people are like, "What is he talking about? You know, stable coins."
And when I thought back to that interview by Sheikh Yamani, in light of the Treasury report, which was really the catalyst for the rethink, and then the Paul Ryan point, and then Trump's point, you know, in August, where he said, "Hey, maybe we'll just pay off our debt with a little Bitcoin," which was a really odd comment. I started to wonder if Bitcoin is the new oil, that it's not, that it is Bitcoin is going to be inflated like oil was, so that it will inflate stable coins, so that stable coins will buy a lot more treasury. Basically, Bitcoin going much, much higher. This Treasury report showed that stable coin demand for T-bills would soar.
Because all those stable coins are backed by some Bitcoin, but mainly by treasuries.
We need a way to weaken the dollar while strengthening the dollar system. And you look at this and you go, gosh, this checks all the boxes. If we inflate the heck out of Bitcoin, you're going to increase stable coins. You're going to increase stable coin demand for T-bills. What that will do, because Bitcoin is a global asset, is it will draw in dollars from around the world into T-bills, into stable coins. But at the same time, the dollar will be collapsing against Bitcoin. That's what I think Trump may have meant by Bitcoin is the new oil.
I just thought it was I'm like, hey, someone hears my stablecoin argument. I don't know if this sounds right. Sounds like a huge bubble, but
it does sound like a bubble, but it doesn't mean it's not possible. Something that would happen.
Yeah. I just thought it was really interesting. Like, because, you know,
Trump is, you know, he's got a bunch of screwy financial guys around. Like, remember, what was his name? Munchkin?
Oh, yeah, Mnuchin.
Mnuchin, that guy. Like
my fellow Tourette sufferer, Mnuchin. Yeah, that guy.
And it's possible they've dreamed some scheme up to, because our debt is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's why we have the auctioneering.
Yeah, our debt seems to be a bit of a problem. And he's got to refi the country somehow with your stable coins. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But everything's happening on January 21st. Everything's going down. We both had the clip, but I didn't even clip it because I saw it was in your list. Where is it? Hotep.
Yeah, Hotep comes on the Nicole Wallace show, and before we play that clip,
all right.
Well, actually, I have a couple of clips to play if you're going to bring him in.
All right.
But first of all, before we play a clip, there's a clip from the last show. I don't have it on this list, but you can look it up real quick. It's called Get Boosted. An NPR message.
Here we go.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says few people have been vaccinated against flu or COVID-19 as the holiday season approaches. NPR's Rob Stein has more.
The CDC says only about one-third of adults have gotten this year's flu shot, and less than 18% have gotten one of the new COVID boosters. As for the new RSV vaccine, only 40% of adults ages 75 and older have gotten that recommended shot. There isn't a lot of flu or RSV right now, and the COVID numbers are still falling from this summer's big surge. But all those viruses could pick up quickly as people start to travel and gather for Thanksgiving in the winter holidays.
So it can pick up. Can pick up an uptick.
Get your shot. So if you didn't like that, then you could listen to Peter Hotez here on Nicole Wallace.
Hold on a second. What's it? I'm looking for it now. Now suddenly.
That's the one you just.
I know. I know, but I can't find it in your list. I'm looking for Hotez, and I don't see him for some reason.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
It's all caps. It says Hotez.
Yeah, I know.
It's in the pile one, bottom of pile one.
Oh, this is very interesting. I don't think I. How did I not get this? Hold on a second, John. Something went very wrong here. Did I miss some of your clips somehow? Hold on a second. Well, we'll have to cut this part out because this is very unprofessional. I set you up and then I screwed it over. Where's Hotess? I'm looking in pile one. No. Oh. Huh. It says Hotess in all caps, but it didn't download for some reason. Well, I'm very sorry about this. Okay. All right. Just when you thought it wouldn't happen, here is Hotess.
Here's the reason why we need to care about this stuff, Nicole, is that we have some big picture stuff coming down the pike starting on January 21st. Mr. Bloomberg mentioned H5N1.
Hold on, stop. I want you to listen. Everyone should listen to this carefully because there's no problem with any diseases whatsoever until Trump gets in office.
No, January 21st, specifically. He's pinpointing it. January 21st.
That's when the shit hits the fan. Here we go.
Nicole, is that we have some big picture stuff coming down the pike starting on January 21st. Mr. Bloomberg mentioned H5.
What does he mean by big picture stuff? What does that even mean?
Disease, famine, pestilence.
On the pike starting on January 21st. Mr. Bloomberg mentioned H5N1. That I'm really worried about. It's all over wild birds on the western part of the United States and going up in the north. It's getting into the poultry. We're seeing sporadic human cases, no human-to-human transmission yet, but that could happen. It's in the cattle. It's in the milk. And that's just the beginning. We have another major coronavirus likely brewing in Asia. We've had SARS in 2002.
Brewing.
SARS-2 COVID-19 in 2019, and we know these viruses are jumping from bats to people thousands of times a year, but that's, there's still...
What? Hold on a second. I've not heard that this is jumping from bats to people thousands of times a year.
Yeah.
This is new.
2019, and we know these viruses are jumping from bats to people thousands of times a year. Mm. But there's still more. We have a big problem with mosquito-transmitted viruses all along the Gulf Coast, where I am here in Texas. So we're expecting dengue and possibly Zika virus coming back, or a Puche virus, maybe even yellow fever. And there's more. Then we have
and
vaccine-preventable diseases going up because of, in part, the anti-vaccine activism that's so prominent right now. We have a fivefold rise in pertussis cases, whooping cough over the last year, 15 measles outbreaks this year. We've got polio that's been in the wastewater in New York State. All that's going to come crashing down on January 21st on the Trump administration. We need a really, really good team to be able to handle this.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
It all starts on January 21st.
Not on the 20th. Nope, on the 21st is when it all goes down. What a
lunatic this guy is.
Yeah.
Now I have to play, that brings me to the clips.
Okay.
Dr. Christina Park.
Oh, where's she from?
These clips were dug up by one of our producers, and it was during a hearing in the Michigan House or Senate.
Oh, yes, this is very good. This is very good, yes.
And she outlined, she's a PhD in virology. She's got all these, I don't know if she's a virologist.
This
is
classic C-SPAN material.
This is good stuff.
Yep.
And the reason this was sent to me, and it's from 2021, it's during the lockdown thing and all this that was going on, and she was fighting against a lot of this stuff. And one of it was sent to me because of this constant commentary about pertussis, and we brought it up. What's pertussis, Brian? Why are they making a fuss?
The whooping cough, you know, that's what pertussis is, right?
Yes, whooping cough. And so she has an explanation on pertussis, and she goes on with other stuff, but the pertussis thing starts us off, and this is like, and after hearing Hotez going on about pertussis, listen to this.
So let's look at DTaP, which the scientists and the CDC have known since 2014 that the acellular pertussis vaccine does not prevent people from getting infected with the pertussis bacteria and passing it to others. In fact, it was never designed to do that. The vaccine was designed to neutralize the pertussis toxin. Pertussis, we know it as whooping cough. It can be fatal for children under 6 months. So neutralizing this toxin saves lives. All right, I'm not going to debate that. But what it doesn't do is neutralize the bacteria. So what happens is fully vaccinated children go to daycare, they pick up that bacteria, and they come home and they give it to their newborn brother or sister. They get deathly ill, and they go to the hospital. Hopefully, our medical professionals are able to save them. But who do they blame? Now the CDC is blaming anti-vaxxers for the limitations of this vaccine design. I suggest that they be transparent and tell parents that although it is preventing severe disease in their children, it is not preventing transmission, because we have created a whole class of asymptomatic pertussis carriers who are increasing the disease. Now, the old DTP vaccine that many of you who are my age or older got did prevent transmission. When we switched to the safer acellular virgin, they knew that it was never designed to prevent transmission. It was safer, it had less adverse events, but pertussis cases have gone through the roof. There's a resurgence in pertussis because of the design of the vaccine, and the vaccinologists know this. They're trying to address it, and so we cannot mandate that something that does not prevent transmission.
Oh, give her the hook, take her out, burn that witch.
I found this to be the most interesting thing that any, so basically guys like Hotez, they know this. They all know this, that they changed the vaccine, because the one I had when I was a kid was the old one, which I guess was more dangerous, but it prevented spread and catching it and spreading it. They know that this is going on, and they lie to the public, and then they blame the anti-vaxxers.
He is, in fact, a childhood vaccine expert. This is a childhood vaccine, children under 7. I think some kids, don't they get it like right away? DTaP, they stick it in your heel or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, but Hotez, he would know.
She goes on with some other little tidbits that are interesting, and I'm going to might as well play a couple of them, at least play this one. This is FluVax.
All right, what about the flu vaccine? Well, they have shown that basically there's no difference, there's no statistical difference if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, whether you get the flu or not. But it's even worse, because although that first year it is somewhat effective, it's about 65% effective at preventing symptoms in you, after that it actually has negative efficacy. And I want to address this because it's very important. Vaccines are made to a specific variant, and when that variant mutates, the vaccine no longer recognizes it. And so it's like you're seeing a completely new virus. And because that's so, you actually get more severe symptoms when you're vaccinated against one variant, and then it mutates, and then your body sees the other variant. So there's the potential, and the science shows that, in fact, with the flu, if you get vaccinated in multiple years, you are more likely to get severe disease, you are more likely have more viral replication, and you are more likely to be hospitalized, both in adults and in children.
Oh, it's money in the bank. This is a great idea. Bring me to the hospital. Perfect. Perfect. Wow. Where is Dr. Christina Park? Is she still with us?
She's dead. They shot her.
Wow. Wow. I hope not.
We should track her down, because she probably has more things to say. She also had some negative commentary. Gee, I can't imagine why. Negative commentary about the COVID vaccine back in 2021, when it first came out.
We are seeing the same thing in COVID with the Delta variant. And so we are mandating that people get a vaccine that could actually make them more sick when they're exposed to the virus. In fact, this week, a paper came out, and what it showed is that with this Delta variant, when you're vaccinated, your body makes antibodies that are supposed to neutralize the virus, but they were supposed to neutralize the old variant. When they see this new variant, what they're doing is the antibodies are taking the virus and helping it infect the cells. All right, that science was just published this week. We need to be looking at the science, and we need our policy to reflect the science, and we also need it to reflect our rights.
Yeah, but she has a Rumble channel.
Oh, good. That should be worth watching.
She's still with us on Rumble. This is good news. This is good
news. Rumble. Nobody Rumble. Listens to them. Okay, well, Rumble. So the last commentary I thought was pretty, I thought this was interesting, too, and this is the end notes.
And so as a PhD who knows the science, I'm in the category of the most vaccine hesitant group. Yes, PhDs are the most vaccine hesitant, followed by people who have less than a high school degree because they know what they don't know and they don't trust their government. And many people, the other group that is very vaccine hesitant, are African Americans. 70% of African Americans have not taken this vaccine. Why? Because they don't trust their government. Do they have reason not to trust their government?
Yeah.
Well, between the years of 1930 and 1970, the CDC conducted the Tuskegee experiment, where they took untreated males with syphilis and they refused to treat them. Even after antibiotics became available, they still did not treat them and they did not tell them that they had syphilis. They told those people that they were there to secure their health, and they did not secure their health. They abused them. You say, well, that was in the past, although I don't think 1970 was that long ago. Well, in 2012, whistleblower William Thompson came forward and said, we published a study that said MMR does not cause autism, but we lied. In fact, we shredded data that showed that when black boys are vaccinated on time, they have increased rates of autism diagnosis. And we shredded it and we left it out of the paper.
Wow, I didn't know the Tuskegee experiment. I knew, but I didn't know about that. Oh man!
Of course not.
That's
who's going to tell you?
Wow. Well, you know, we've changed though. We've changed. We've gotten smart in the vaccine industry. We've wised up. We're like, we're not going to do that on black Americans anymore. Let's find some brown people to work on. This is the Reid Hoffman podcast. I'm sorry, the Bill Gates podcast with Reid Hoffman as his discussion partner.
Well, when India's an example of a country where, well, there's plenty of things that are,
there's a laugh
tell plenty of things
plenty of things that are difficult there. The health, nutrition, education is improving, and they're stable enough and generating their own government revenue enough that it's very likely that 20 years from now, people will be dramatically better off. And it's kind of a laboratory to try things that then, once you prove them out in India, you can take to other places.
It's
and
a
so
lab.
Our biggest non-US office for the foundation is in India, and the most number of pilot rollout things we're doing anywhere in the world are with partners in India. And if you go there and you've never been, you might think, whoa, this is a chaotic place. And you know, you're not used to so many levels of income all being on the street at the same time, but you will get a sense of the vibrancy.
It's a lab. He just says it. Yeah, this is our lab. That's where we got all our people working there. It's great. Ha! Of course, the Indians didn't like it so much.
Billionaire Bill Gates' recent admission in a podcast hasn't gone down well with Indians. The tech mogul called India a kind of laboratory to try things as he talked about health and nutrition on the podcast. Now, his remark has left many fuming, with people calling him out for his comment. People took to social media to slam Bill Gates for referring to Indians as guinea pigs. Some even went to the extent of asking him to stay out of India. Now, this backlash also revived the 2009 controversy, which involved an NGO funded by the Gates Foundation. The clinical trials of the human papilloma virus, or the HPV virus vaccine by NGO PATH on thousands of tribal girls in India, had led to 7 deaths. That time, the cause of the deaths was attributed to unknown reasons. Months later, investigations revealed that there was misrepresentation of facts, lack of informed consent, and exploitation.
If I were Bill Gates, I'd stay away from any Starbucks, anybody with a hoodie and a backpack. This is...
Bill has always been, you know, ever since ever since he got pied, which was some years ago, he was pretty lax about his security. He was floating around. He'd take buses.
Yeah. He'd never fly coach. Yeah. He'd fly coach.
Well, the coach thing is interesting. That's what he always said. I caught him once.
In first class?
Yes, because he buys coach tickets.
And he says, don't you know who I am?
He doesn't even have to do that. They put him in first class. So I grilled him about this. He knows me. So I said, what are you doing here? I thought you always fly for. I thought you were supposed to be back in coach with me. He says, well, you know, they make me come up here. They put me in first class because of, you know, he had some, it, but he always flies for, he's always in first class. They did as soon as Bill Gates buys a coach. So what he manages to do is get a coach ticket and end up in first class every time.
The question on everybody's,
now he flies in his G4, whatever he's got, because is it, when he married, got married to Melinda, she insisted that he get a jet, and so he relented. And now he doesn't fly on commercial at all.
The question on everyone's mind is, what were you doing in first class?
I was in coach. Oh. I was walking down the aisle, and there he was.
And you stopped. You said, hey, come back with me. What are you doing? And you were holding up the line? Well, you're talking to Bill.
I wasn't. I don't hold up lines. I'm a very good flyer about that.
Did you have a backpack and turn it right into his face?
Yeah, you bang people around with a backpack. Yeah, I love that. Those guys.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage, especially that courage of questioning Bill Gates on his first class seat, and say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the censorship industry. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. John C. Dvorak!
Morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. In the morning to all ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air. Subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room. Well, I know the answer to this one. I know that we should be at 1,800. That's our regular trollage for a Thursday, correct?
Yeah.
2,041, baby.
That's because of the pardon.
No, I think it's because of the CEO. Everyone was emailing me about the CEO.
Oh, it could
CEO.
Be that. One of the two, but you get news, yeah. You always pick up hundreds yeah. more people.
Yeah, more.
To see what we have to say about
more
it.
More assassinations, please. It's good for business. This by the way, that's good. It's just the truth. Just the truth.
It is true. It's true.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, those trolls are all checking us out at trollroom.io. They could, of course, be using a modern podcast app, unlike the nonsense that people supposedly get all their podcasts from YouTube. That's what they're trying. They want to push this is such a big push. Oh, you got a podcast, you have to do video. You have to do, if you don't do video, no one's going to see your podcast. They want you on there so they can heat you. They can heat you up, heat you down. They want to control you. Get your own RSS feed and use a modern podcast app, which is completely independent of any Silicon Valley company because they use Podcast Index, podcastapps.com. Do yourself a favor. You know, I saw that one of Joe Rogan's episodes didn't even appear on Apple. They just skipped an episode or they took it down. I don't know.
What was it?
Mike Rowe. I don't know why. And Mike Rowe? Mike Rowe, yeah, the Dirty Jobs guy. I have no idea. And let me just check. Let me see if it's still that way. Let me see. Rogan Apple Podcasts. It was, people are complaining about it. Like, I'm getting a modern podcast app. I don't want that nonsense. Let's see. Here we go. 34, 35, 33. It's not there. Oh, no. Ah, they heard it. It's there now. Oh, man. There goes that whole gambit. And I guess Apple didn't take it down. But Spotify and Apple have been known to take down episodes. That happens on a daily basis. So your favorite podcast, you want to keep listening to it, make sure that you protect yourself. It's really for yourself. And most of these apps are free. You can donate to the developer. And they deserve it, quite honestly. Podcastapps.com. There's a, man, we got a lot of different things to talk about for our donation segment because, you know, of course, we have value for value. And I got a lot of, did you get P.O. Box stuff?
I'm sorry?
Did you get any cool stuff in the P.O. Box?
Yeah, I got a couple of things.
I got an AeroPress, which is a single cup coffee. Like,
yeah, I got one of those.
Have you tried it out yet?
No, well, you know. Yeah, no, I have it though. I have a Breville cappuccino maker, which makes single cups. It's mm-hmm. like, and I have used that device before because it's the other people have them, and I've used it. It makes a terrific cup of coffee, far better than the cafe filter and the stuff that you like.
What? I don't use filter. I use the French press.
French press is much better. French press to me, I don't mind it with the right beans, but French press can produce a very bitter cup of coffee.
Ah. Well,
this won't. This is does
my gigawatt tastes just perfect. That was from Trent Surscovy. Surscovy of the Piedmont. He sent a very nice long. What kind of paper is that? That's an interesting paper that he typed that on. It's like never seen.
Yes,
paper.
It is a silver paper, and it was like, I think it's some sort of old and it's thick.
Yeah, very thick. Very thick.
It's very peculiar. I think it was some sort of old kind of, is a paper that goes way back for some sort of special printer.
Hmm. Well, it was kind of interesting. And I also wanted to say hello to Daniel Walker Parker, who is in McLennan County Gulag in Waco. Then he sent in a whole bunch of forever stamps. He hopes that will be value for value. So I will keep them for us. It seems like he might be there for a bit. He sends an interesting note. It's always interesting to get something from the penitentiary. And then we need to send out prayers and karma to Dame Astrid. I don't know if you saw that note this morning.
Oh, yeah. I heard about last night when I was talking to Jay. She's in Japan. They were going to meet. They can't meet now because Astrid broke her leg.
Yes, she fell and managed to break the ball off the top of her femur. Which just sounds horrible.
I don't even discuss it.
But she's in good hands.
I know she had to have an operation, and I immediately thought it was a compound fracture. That's the kind of fracture, I think it's compound, that where the bone goes through the skin and sticks out.
Oh, no, I hope not. Anyway, she's already had a new joint fitted. Gotta love Japanese efficiency. All right, so
prayers. She's in Hong Kong. It's a Chinese efficiency in this case.
No. Sir Mark is in Hong Kong.
I thought she was in Hong Kong. That's where she broke her leg.
I don't think so. I think he went to Hong Kong to receive another award. You know, I got to pick up another award in Hong Kong. So sorry. Can't be with you, Astrid. I'm picking up an award. Yeah, so we're all thinking of her. And thank you to Jeremy and his daughter, Taylor, who came through Fredericksburg. He's the guy that's sending you a computer and some community coffee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, so he came through. It was very nice. So it's always nice. If you're in Fredericksburg, you know, let me know if I can work it out. I'd love to... say hi, at least have a cup of coffee or maybe a lunch. Anyway, value for value, that's how it works. All of these things are valuable to us. We love these, receiving things like that in the post office. We also very much enjoy the work that many of our producers do to support us, time, talent, or treasure. One of the premier ways that people can help us is by creating artwork for the show. We like to have a new piece of art for every single episode, and we've been doing that for a very long time. And we want to thank the artist for episode 1717. We titled that one Mr. Peepers, and it was Capitalist Agenda who brought us the artwork, which was Skibbity Toilets. And even though neither of us understand the Skibbity lingo that well, it kind of had it all there, didn't it? I mean, was there anything else that we saw that was worthy that we looked at on the list? Were there other things
that was such a professional looking piece and it had and stylized? It was hard to be. I mean, I was even going to use the Face Bank social credit one for the newsletter, but what did I use for the newsletter? To look
the Face Bank social credit. I'm looking.
Yeah, it's right underneath the Skibbity one.
Social credit. Yes, that was.
I like that piece.
Capagena did a great job on this one. It was just fun. It was fun to see. I liked it, and you know, probably not AI. Not that it matters all that much.
It may or may not be, but it's beside the point. He's a pro and he knows what he's doing.
Well, remember, art is God's soulful expression of his love, so that can't come from a computer. Sorry. So that's what Capital Agenda did.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Self-righteous.
I'm self-righteous now. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you how I feel, what I think. Can't change that.
So I did the phone call. A message just came in. I didn't know this was even on.
We have a voicemail for the show?
No, I don't have. No, I'm just telling you the phone rang during one of your clips, and I picked it up to see what the hell is going on. NOAA or somebody, they canceled the tsunami alert.
Oh, that's wussy.
So I guess that went out the whole state of California or something. I don't know what
but kill is. Do you remember the phone ringing when the tsunami alert was on, or did they not call you?
No, well, I was probably in bed.
It's just, I don't want to keep
a phone by my bed.
Yeah, no.
Like other people do, because they use it. A lot of people, which always surprises me, they use their phone as their alarm clock.
That seems to be most of the population these days.
Yeah.
I know, you don't. What kind of alarm clock do you have? You have one you plug in?
I got
an
alarm clock that's got a big bell on it.
So it's a wind-up still?
No. No, I have an electric, but it's from China, and it has all kinds of features, and it does cool stuff.
Well, like
but,
what?
You know, it's an
like
actual
what?
Clock.
Hold
it's
on.
It's got sound effects, and it does, you know, it has two or three different moments where it could wake you. And
this sounds like a potential tip of the day products.
No, because the problem is that the shoddy, what would you call it?
Manufacturing?
Worksmanship.
Worksmanship, yes.
The shoddy worksmanship of some Chinese goods, including this clock, even though it's got a lot of cool features, is not going to get a tip of the day from me.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Tip of the day is wide open. We're all excited, by the way, for the tip of the day. People need to know that there's a lot more shows still coming. Tip of the day, we've got, I know we have some more stories to talk about. And again, thanks to Capitalist Agenda for bringing that artwork. We loved it. It was good to see. It was good to see an original. We appreciate it so much. NoAgendaArtGenerator.com is where you can see all of these pieces of artwork in the modern podcast apps. Dreb Scott puts them right into the chapters, also only available in a modern app. What are you waiting for? And you can participate by creating an account and uploading to NoAgendaArtGenerator.com. Now, we always appreciate any treasure people send. We will thank everybody, $50 and above, not below, for reasons of anonymity and for brevity, although we could have easily done it today. And also, we have our sustaining donations, which we appreciate. Any amount, any frequency, you go to noagendadonations.com, and you can set that up yourself. And of course, if you get up to $1,000, you become a knight or a dame of the No Agenda Roundtable. We have an entire peerage model. There's a lot that you can do for your No Agenda show. And what we do in return is we thank our executive and associate executive producers. You get those forever credits by supporting us with $200 or more. We'll read your note. That's an associate executive producer. You can use that credit anywhere credits are recognized, including imdb.com. And of course, you can put in your social media profiles, but you can use it, you know, on your resume as well. And $300 or above, we read your note and you get an executive producer credit for the episode. It'll be 17-18. And we kick it off with Derek Heidbrink, Parts Unknown, as far as I can see. And he comes in with a cool Instanight donation, $1,000, and says, happy holidays. I look forward to joining the ranks. Oh, no, this is a knighthood and a climate change studies. Whoa, two in one go. Please change my title to Sir Double Dr. Derek. And please send travel karma and estate closure karma. I narrowly escaped Hurricane Milton while traveling for work and could use a top up. Keep up the good work. Well, absolutely. Thank you very much. And we will see you for the ceremony in just a little bit.
You've got karma.
Sir DC Knight's up, or Sir Knight DC. Let's get that straight. The right order. He's in Oregon, 444. From Sir Knight DC of the High Desert. In the morning, John and Adam. As always, thank you for continued deconstruction of the media propagated upon the American people. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin just passed 100K, and I'm sharing with you, too.
Woo.
I'd like to call out Ryle, like Kyle, who shared your show with me in 2018 as a mega douche, who's never donated.
Douchebag.
Mega.
Mega douche.
Could I get a John Fisting Nuts jingle, whichever short, long, and house buying karma, please?
Just go for it, John. Tell us your
it's a classic
about the fisting method of eating snacks on an airplane. Okay.
I see this on the airplane, and it's very annoying, and I think it will result in fights breaking out, because it's just so annoying to watch. Guy takes his bag of peanuts, and he throws a pile of them into his palm of his hand, and then he makes a fist around the nuts. nuts.
Around the nuts.
And then he shakes his fist to try to bring a nut to the little hole.
Stop.
To the little hole.
And then he throws a nut in his mouth from his fist.
From his fist.
Then he does it again. He shakes and throws and shakes and throws. It is annoying as hell to watch.
You've got karma.
Since we don't have many jingles today, I opted to play the whole thing. Quint Y. Newell, Olympia, Washington, 333.33. And he has a note, which I believe I have. Is this a make good? This is Quint, right? Yes. Sir Sigma here. With a big in the morning to you both. In the morning, I donated on Sunday and somehow hit send before adding a note. So here's a make good for myself. We like this. This is a very good trend. I want to wish a very happy birthday to my beautiful bride and smoking hot wife, Kimberly Ann, a.k.a. Hardcore Mama, whose birthday is today, a show day. How about that? Happy birthday, babe. Love you. Mean it. Also, a happy belated birthday to my mom, who turned 77 on Monday, my second favorite woman on earth. I was recently knighted, but did enjoy the way you guys said my name, Quint Y. Newell. Quint is a lifelong nickname. Thanks, Mom. She couldn't deal with another Bobby in her life. My real name, so much for being anonymous, is Robert Yates Newell V, hence Quint. Not bad, Mom. Thanks for putting up with me all these years. I'd like to request a smoking hot wife boogity boogity. I got a boogity for you. Smoking hot wife boogity boogity. For my wife and F cancer for my mom, who's still battling but still going strong. Thanks, dudes, he says. Quint, Sir Sigma. You got it, brother.
You've got karma.
We got $333.33 from the Frankenmuth Fudge Kitchen, proprietor Zach McLennan.
Ooh, Fudge Kitchen.
Fudge Kitchen in Frankenmuth, Michigan. Dear John and Adam, he writes, it's on a sheet of paper, as you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for all you do to keep us going. You helped us navigate, by the way, it's handwritten in a, not as bad as another note, but it's not great. Help us navigate through the crazy times of COVID. Random things are capitalized. Like, for example, navigates capitalized through the craziest capitalized times of COVID capitalized and beyond capitalized.
I find it funny. I wish I had a copy of this note.
Yes, well, this is, I didn't. Jay's in Japan, so she didn't do the. I had to do all this myself, and I wasn't going to copy it. We are a family-owned fudge kitchen in Frankenmuth, Michigan, that specializes, capitalized, in hand, capitalized, made fudge, handmade fudge right in front of your eyes.
Send some.
Let us make, he did send some to me. He's going to have to send some to you.
Okay.
And the fudge is genuine, let me put it that way. It's very fudge.
Fudgy. It's fudgy. It's fudge.
Let us make your holidays real sweet and get our fudge shipped directly to you, your front door. Use the promo code NOAGENDA to receive shipping for orders over $30. Visit noagendafudge.com.
Woo! Now you're talking. We got a fudge brand. Nice.
noagendafudge.com from now until the end of the year.
That's an easy
Let our
one
family
to remember.
Sweeten up your holidays, sincerely.
It started off so demure, and then all of a sudden it went to the fudge. Nice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was good. It was very, well done. Slipped it in, yeah.
Well done. Anonymous comes in with $300. No note that I can see. That means a double up karma for you.
You've got karma.
Yeah, that guy actually sent the check. He didn't even want to be mentioned in anything, but I thought I'd put it on there for bookkeeping purposes. We don't like to.
Yeah, I'll do the next one from Eli the coffee coffee guy in Bensonville, Illinois, $215.05. Always an interesting amount that he sends us. That may be $200 plus fees for all I know. It's been an interesting last couple of news days. South Korean martial law. Yeah, for a day. CEO assassination, Syria, Georgia, and a high-profile presidential pardon. Such a fertile news environment. It's like Christmas came early for you guys. But before Christmas actually is here, producers should consider giving the gift of caffeination to friends and family this holiday season. Visit gigawattcoffeeroasters.com. Use code ITM20 for 20% off your order and stay caffeinated, says Eli, the coffee guy.
Which brings us to Linda Lupatkin, who wants jobs karma. Wow. And she also has a message for everybody out there. For a faster, more effective job search, she writes, Visit.
Fail again. Fail every single time.
I don't know. I've nailed this at least once every couple months.
Every month or so, yeah.
Visit imagemakersinc.com. That's imagemakersinc with a K. Or go to your executive resume or your go-to. Okay. Your go-to for your executive resumes and job search needs. Work with Linda Liu, Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes.
Jobs, and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You've got
karma. And then we have Judd Hawley. I think it's Hawley, is it not?
No, it's H-A-W-L-R-Y.
You have the note.
I do. In fact,
there it is. Proof. It's a note.
Proof. It's a note. He came in with $200. Now, this is actually a note, and it's being directed. I'm going to direct it to you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He says, and this is not more interesting writing, printing, I'd say. I'd like to be a, I'm sorry. I listen to a ton of podcasts, a ton.
That's a lot. Yeah.
But yours is the only one I never miss. I've made a few end of show mixes, but felt something, I felt pangs of, I felt pangs of guilt. Okay, I got it.
Guilt, huh?
During the donation segments. That's why he gave us 200.
Oh, I see.
I have three EPs of funk/folk music on all listening platforms at Judd, Hawley.
All right.
Judge Hawley. Check them out. Also, how does one put up value for value music? And this is the question I'm asking Adam.
I'm glad you asked. There's many different ways you can do it. I would say look at rssblue.com, podhome.fm, or wavelake.com, WAVLAKE.com. And they will be happy to get you started.
It's the tip of the day.
Yeah. Okay. Tip of the day. Was that it? Was that his, any request?
Yes. And he signs off.
All right. Or you can send me an email, adam@curry.com, and I'll get you started. I can help you out. There's lots of people in No Agenda Universe and Nation who will help you. And with that, we thank our executive and associate executive producers for supporting us for episode 17, 18. Again, we'll be thanking everybody $50 and above, and thank you for those sustaining donations. Even if you came in as an executive or associate executive producer today, they help a lot. We appreciate them. Go to noagendadonations.com. That's noagendadonations.com. Support the show. And thank you for supporting this episode.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
We got a few things. I think we should at least talk about the French government failing.
Yes, a massive fail. I'm sure you have clips. I think I had a BBC clip that was pretty decent. But what do you have?
These are from, I think, these are either NPR or NTD. French government fails one.
France's parliament today voted on a no confidence motion against the government.
I'm guessing NTD. It's just a guess.
According to the French constitution, President Emmanuel Macron will need to appoint a new prime minister and form a new government. This is a situation not seen in 62 years in the country, and it marks the first time in history. The National Rally has joined the leftist coalition in a no-confidence vote against the government. For many members of parliament, this is a historic day.
The prime minister has over-dramatized, hoping to extend his mandate. I think that, as the president of the National Assembly said, we must also respect our institutions. Alternative ways exist. It's not written in the Constitution for nothing. The program of the left-wing coalition I support should be the basis for discussion. As there is no majority in Parliament, we'll have to make concessions so that the different political groups move towards each other.
Prime Minister Michel Barnier, a member of Macron's group in Parliament, warned that France could face significant instability. The government, which began its mandate in September after snap elections in June, has become the shortest-serving administration in French history.
There won't be a shutdown or any chaos. French President Emmanuel Macron said it. And even if I'm not from his groups, I agree with him.
The no-confidence vote follows tensions over the 2025 budget. With no compromise reached in Parliament, the Prime Minister invoked a constitutional article to bypass the legislative body. According to National Rally member Philippe Ballard, a sharp rise in planned taxes made the no-confidence vote unavoidable.
The budget was 40 billion in sub-commentary taxes, so it's unacceptable. And since the budget will be abandoned, retirement pensions won't be decreased, electricity taxes won't go up, and some medicines will continue to be reimbursed. That's why we voted to dismiss the government.
It was both sides. Everybody hated this guy.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, you're no good. You're no good. There's a second part to this?
Yeah, see what that is. Short.
The French Parliament must vote on the 2025 budget law, a particularly challenging one as France's public deficit is skyrocketing. French President Emmanuel Macron urgently needed to find a solution to reassure the French, but also the financial market and the EU institutions. Here in Parliament, some members of political group, in casual conversations, expresses concerns about a political crisis that could potentially escalate into a financial one.
Yeah, I think the BBC report is better because they get more into the weeds and it's a little clearer than NTD, who've taken to putting a sock over their microphone for some reason. Know what happened there. Here's BBC.
French politicians have ousted the government in a no-confidence vote, leaving the prospect of months of turmoil in France. Michel Barnier is the first French prime minister to be dismissed in this way since 1962. Opposition parties called the vote after Mr. Barnier used special powers to force through controversial social security reforms. In the no-confidence debate, the far-right leader, Marine Le Pen, said the minority government had refused to make sufficient budget concessions to avoid a crisis. She said Mr. Barnier's budget would impose suffering on the French people.
This budget takes French people hostage, and most especially the most vulnerable. The poorer pensioners, people with illness, impoverished workers. French people considered too rich to receive aid, but not poor enough to escape a hammering from the taxman.
The French budget minister, Laurent Saint-Martin, challenged those MPs who had opposed the budget.
Do you want to deprive New Caledonia of €1 billion of credit? Do you want to prevent the financing of OPEC? Do you want to prevent support for Ukraine? Do you really want to prevent the payment of the disabled adults' allowance? Say it frankly. And thank you to all the people who are here who take their responsibilities seriously.
The French President Emmanuel Macron is likely to keep Mr. Barnier as a caretaker prime minister while he seeks a replacement acceptable to a deeply divided parliament.
They're broke. That's basically it. They're broke. They got no money. They want to austerity. I'm sure it was IMF related. You gotta screw the old people. That's what you typically
do.
That's what you do. South Korea. We got a boots on the ground from South Korea. Did you see that come in?
Yeah, I did. I have it here.
Timeline of events. This is very succinct, and it's very specific about what this was really about. Because,
well, you want to play the clips first, and then we can play the boots on the ground.
You have clips? Oh boy, how many do you have?
Two.
Okay. Are they of that same? Is it NTD?
South Korea. It's got to be.
South Korea is reeling after its president declared martial law. Although the order was later lifted amid widespread condemnation, the move plunged the country's political landscape into chaos. South Korean defense minister, as well as Yoon's senior policy advisors, offered to resign following the unrest.
Six South Korean opposition parties submitted bills of impeachment for President Yoon Suk-yeol on Wednesday. That came after Yoon's sudden move imposing martial law the night before. In an address, he had claimed there were anti-state forces among his opponents. But after parliament unanimously rejected his decree, hours later, Yoon backed down. A vote on his impeachment is expected within the coming days. It would pass in South Korea's National Assembly if two-thirds of lawmakers support the bill. And that would then lead to a trial held by South Korea's Constitutional Court. On Wednesday morning, the country's National Assembly building bore scars of violence the night before. Boxes, chairs piled up as barricades. Security camera footage released Wednesday gave a better view of events the night before. Soldiers tasked with imposing martial law landing on the sports pitch near Parliament before smashing the building's windows and clashing with parliamentary aides. It all marks South Korea's biggest political crisis in decades, and the first time martial law has been declared since 1980, before it became a democracy. Yoon, a career prosecutor, had been very unpopular with the South Korean public. He's faced discontent over his economic policy, scandals, and other controversies. Should Yoon resign or be removed from office, Prime Minister Han Duck-soo would fill in as leader until a new election is held.
Now, I want to read this boots on the ground before we do the second clip.
Well, actually, you can read it now because I don't think the second clip adds anything.
No, probably won't. So the timeline of events on December 3rd, President Yoon. Now, he's just the president, but the parliament is opposition. His opposition is the majority. So he's kind of a lame duck president, I guess. On December 3rd, Yoon. No?
Well, lame duck specifically refers to somebody who's just been voted out, and he hasn't been voted out.
Okay. He's ineffective. He got no power. He got no juice except for this. So December 3rd, Yoon gave a State of the Union speech on TV. He discussed the threats to democracy and accused the left of destroying the nation. 10:28 p.m., he declares martial law at the end of his speech. 10:30, the 707th Special Mission Group, about 300 in number, raided the National Election Commission building. They confiscated servers and phones and left after 3 hours. 12 a.m., some soldiers go to the National Assembly building and they loiter around but don't even block any politicians from going into the assembly building. The opposition party voted to lift the martial law. President Yoon lifted the martial law after only 6 hours. It seems like the whole thing was just to raid the National Election Commission because there is talk of election fraud. So the whole thing was a smokescreen, according to our boots on the ground. Just to break in and get all the details and get the information. Everything else is window dressing.
It's like Watergate.
Yes, only not secret. So I would say the 707th Special Mission Group in Korea is elite special forces unit specializing in black ops, counterterrorism, special ops, reconnaissance, high-risk intelligence gathering, etc. The left has been accused of using fake, here it comes, mail-in ballots and hacking voting machines to win elections, similar to what happened in the U.S. Earlier this year in 2024, the left-wing party surprised everybody with a huge victory and won the majority of seats. Okay. Well, I wonder if it's Dominions. We appreciate that. Good report. That's a lot better than anyone else gave us.
Something interesting as opposed to there's no... It's at least something interesting as opposed to, well, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which is the reports. Well, let's talk about the NDAA, which has got I got these down as WTF clips. So there's something fishy in these clips. This is about the reauthorization of the of the
National Defense Authorization Act. The money. It's the $1 trillion boondoggle we do every single year. Sometimes we slip something in, like the Smith Modernization Act. Sometimes it's just money.
The National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2025 is the bill that sets the spending priorities for the national defense programs of the Department of Defense and the nuclear weapons programs within the Department of Energy. Now, the House of Representatives passed its version of the NDAA back in June with only Republican support, and the Senate Armed Services Committee also passed its version with broad bipartisan support back in June.
Our colleagues on the Armed Services Committee completed their work on the NDAA back in June, and they did it with bipartisan support.
Is this guy still alive, Mitch McConnell? Isn't he on the Fritz? Isn't he Fritz?
Well, he's on the Fritz.
I saw him freeze up again the other day.
He froze up, I think, three times in the last couple of weeks.
But yet here he is. He's doing important work of helping us pass the $1 trillion budget. So nice.
They handed the legislation off to the Democratic leader with months to spare.
And the number one highlight of the product is what the chairman mentioned, is the focus on quality of life for our service members and their families.
Oh, I'm sure that's the number one priority in that 1,000 pages of bill. Mm-hmm.
And certainly one of the biggest issues was pay for junior enlisted. We upped that pay by 19.5%.
It is expected that later this week, congressional leaders will unveil their agreement for the NDAA for fiscal year 2025. And it's also expected that a slew of nearly 70 bills that have already passed on the House floor and that are meant to counter the malign influence of the Chinese Communist Party worldwide will be attached to the NDAA for fiscal year 2025.
This cannot continue. You can't continue to do business with the Communist Chinese Party and not realizing that there's concentration camps in China where they forcibly harvest. They cut out the organs of the people that they're incarcerating. Yes, we want to say something. This is unacceptable. You must stop it. You must be held accountable for these atrocities.
That was Republican Congressman Scott Perry from Pennsylvania discussing the Falun Gong Protection Act, a bill that is expected to be attached to this year's National Defense Authorization Act alongside the Biosecure Act and other bills designed to counter China in the realms of AI, military capabilities, and critical infrastructure.
Ramping it up, baby. Getting it ready.
And what did the WTF comes from the Falun Gong Protection Act?
Yeah, we have to protect them because they're the good guys. They're against our mortal enemies, our new enemy, China. Yeah. Where does Falun Gong hang out besides New York? Are they in Taiwan by any chance?
I don't know them to be in Taiwan. This mostly, I don't know. It's just a strange operation. I will say this. So I'm watching the show The Agency.
Yeah.
And there was a show a few years ago called Berlin Station, which was about a CIA operation in the middle of Berlin. And The Agency is about a CIA station in the middle of London.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in, there's a million people working in there. It's like, oh, geez, what are they all doing? And so I'm thinking when I'm watching this, wait a minute. Don't we make a huge fuss about the quote-unquote Chinese police stations that are in New York and elsewhere, which are probably not police? I mean, they're the same thing. What's the difference between us having a CIA station in the middle of Berlin and all around the world, and the Chinese doing the same thing? I would like to know.
I don't know. That's a good question. You should do some research.
I'm not going to do any research.
ChatGPT.
I want somebody out there listening to the show who knows. You know, that's the thing about this show. You can do that.
Here, listen to this. The Falun Gong Protection Act. This bill requires the president to impose visa and property blocking sanctions on foreign persons that are knowingly responsible for, are complicit in, or have engaged in the involuntary harvesting of organs in China. The sanction shall not apply to certain activities such as authorized U.S. intelligence or law enforcement activities. We can harvest, no problem.
I didn't read it that way, but yeah, I guess so.
That's what I'm reading. Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Part two.
Oh, that sounds like some marketing.
In July of this year, the Bipartisan Commission on the National Defense Strategy published its final report. Commission finds that in many ways, China is outpacing the United States and has largely negated the U.S. military advantage in the Western Pacific through two decades of focused military investment.
We're behind.
The National Defense Authorization Act of fiscal year 2025 will authorize the spending of nearly $1 trillion in government spending. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Luis Eduardo Martinez, NTD News.
Okay, I'm going to spend a couple of days looking through all the Chinese parts of that, because this is going to come into play during Trump's first year. This money's already set. It's big, beautiful ships. It's going to be space stuff. We're behind. You just heard it. We're behind, people. That's why we had to pass this quick, because we're behind. We're behind the Chinese. And if that wasn't bad enough, the Chinese are everywhere now.
New details tonight on what's being called one of the worst cyber hacks in history, with federal officials revealing they've been investigating China for months after hackers compromised the networks of multiple U.S. communications companies and may still be lurking in the systems of at least some of them.
Lurking.
FBI and federal cybersecurity officials say these Chinese government-affiliated hackers managed to steal records, intercept some voice calls, even penetrate the wiretap system used by the Justice Department to investigate people suspected of crimes or spying. Officials say most of the private communication intercepted by the hackers involved people affiliated with the government or politics. But the access to companies like Verizon and AT&T means the communications of nearly every American are vulnerable. And now a new warning.
Here we go.
To be careful what you communicate and use encrypted communication when you can. Think Signal, WhatsApp, or iMessage.
Use the stuff that we have access to.
Those blue text bubbles assign what you're saying is protected.
Oh, you need a blue bubble. Green bubble's no good.
Is a warning like that overkill in your view?
I think it's a good standard hygiene practice for operating in today's modern technology environment. You have to be really mindful again about the technology you're using, how it's secured.
The culprits, officials say, a group called Salt Typhoon.
Salt Typhoon!
The same collective allegedly behind the hacks of the Trump and Harris campaigns before the election. Officials even now still trying to understand the scale, scope, and timeline of this hack.
We have to understand that the digital connectivity that we all rely on, that we benefit from economically, can also be used against us.
Now, the coincidence of this and this next clip is not lost on me. Where we talked about this on the last show, that I was having trouble with the new iPhones, with my Android-based phone, with text messaging. Text messages wouldn't show up, and you know, it was reproducible sometimes. Which it doesn't really, it's kind of not the definition of reproducible, but it would happen frequently only with people who use iMessage and the brand new iPhones with my S22 Cat, you know, Android Go based bubble flip phone, green bubble flip phone. So then there's this warning, which is a follow-on to that.
The FBI is warning about texting between iPhones and Androids because those messages aren't fully secure. Unlike iPhone to iPhone or Android to Android chats, which are encrypted, cross-platform texts can be intercepted by hackers. Apple's version of RCS, Rich Communication Services, a messaging upgrade, doesn't have end-to-end encryption for these texts yet. To keep your chats safe, use encrypted apps like WhatsApp or Telegram. These apps encrypt your messages, making them unreadable to hackers, even if intercepted. WhatsApp uses end-to-end encryption by default, ensuring only you and the recipient can read the messages. Telegram offers secret chats with added privacy features like self-destructing messages. Both apps prioritize security, making them harder for hackers to access compared to standard text messages between iOS and Android devices. And if your friend refuses to switch, just say, "Do it for our safety, or I'll stop texting you." Sometimes security means tough love.
Sometimes security means tough love. Okay, Fed.
What kind of tough love? Well, let me stop for it. Just give it one piece of thought here. So I'm texting you about, we're going to start the show at 11:05 because I have to go get whatever, just something like that. But I should you should say to me, no.
No.
Don't be texting me stuff like that. That's tough kind love. Of important information. Like, I'll meet you at 3 because of the tough love thing here. What are they talking about? Is everybody like a bunch of spooks out there that they have to protect every stupid message? You say, oh, hi, honey. How you doing? Oh, I have missed you. I miss you, miss you, miss you. You better secure that.
Okay, here's what I think is going on. So if you text between an Android phone and an iMessage, it goes through the short messaging system cell phone-based network. That requires warrants. It's a pain in the butt. You got to get into the system. You got to go call the guy. You got to go file some forms. If it's Telegram or WhatsApp, that's much easier. Signal. I'm pretty sure they're in those systems. You know, that's why they're recommending it. Now, you heard RCS. RCS is the new standard that Europe forced Apple to comply to so that we both have all the awesome features of iMessage, which is like, oh, I can see when someone's typing. I can see if someone read the message.
That's not new.
No, but you, to do it between Android phones and iPhones, the European Union forced Apple to move to this RCS standard. The RCS standard is something that is registered and goes through, again, your cell phone network. They don't want you using it. Oh, that's insecure. By the way, you can totally encrypt that on both sides. Oh, that's not good. The Chinese might read about your 3 p.m. appointment. They want you to continue to use WhatsApp and all these other systems that don't use the SMS text messaging system. It screams that to me. These are the feds.
I don't use any of these things. I mean, you know, I use very simple stuff. And it's what it sounds like to me, too. Why are they promoting WhatsApp to such an extreme unless it's compromised?
It's Facebook.
It has to be compromised.
Yes. And Telegram, or if we know about that, Pavel said, oh, all right, well, you know, we'll be on the lookout for people who are up to no good. We'll help you out there. They arrested the guy.
They did.
And Signal, well, the lady now at NPR used to run Signal. So I'm sorry. I don't trust any of these systems. Not for anything secure. I use PGP encryption on my email. Works with Proton Mail, by the way, out of the box. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I have one more thing here. Yeah, actually two things. So this story about the stowaway who wanted to go to France. You heard about this? The lady who snuck onto a Delta flight. I think it was Delta flight.
I have no knowledge of this.
Oh, and then she was, and then, you know, they're going to ship her back and she's screaming like, I don't want to go back to America. I'm like, what is this story? Just kept coming back, kept coming back, kept coming back. And of course, what's interesting is why does this Russian lady who has a U.S. visa not want to be in America? She snuck onto a flight to, I guess she has no money, because she wanted to request asylum in France. And France went, no, we have enough problems here. And they sent her back. So finally, the story starts to unfold. I'm like, oh, maybe this is what it's about. Listen to this report.
New video of a suspected stowaway on her way to France from New York's JFK International Airport. The footage showing a Delta crew member questioning the woman after she allegedly snuck onto the plane last week without a ticket.
She took 10 minutes to just tumble her bags to find a boarding pass, which she did not have at all.
She allegedly went through security at JFK, but never showed ID and boarded without a ticket. Passengers say she tried to avoid detection on the full flight by going from one bathroom to another without ever taking a seat. Authorities say the woman is a Russian national and a legal resident of the U.S. According to French authorities, she was not admitted into French territory due to a lack of a valid travel document or visa and was placed in a waiting area for her rerouting to the United States since she had a valid U.S. residence permit. Days later, officials struggled as they tried to send her back to the U.S. on another Delta flight.
She got belligerent, so then more stewardess came in to try to restrain her, and that's when everything started to escalate.
The woman was removed from the flight and remained in France.
Here it comes.
The big question is, how did she allegedly go through security at JFK without showing ID and boarded without a ticket? TSA is preparing a civil case against the woman, and Delta Airlines is investigating. It is unclear if she will face any charges.
So it was that end bit where they say, the big question is, how does she get onto the airplane? No. My question is, what is this woman about? Why didn't she just buy a ticket? Why, if she's why does she want to request asylum? But no, the big question is, how did she get on? And then I remembered I had a report from November 22nd. A bipartisan group of 12 senators has urged the TSA Inspector General to investigate the agency's use of facial recognition, which has been rampant. Every single airport in America that I've been to, and I've been to a few, but everyone I've spoken to, it's all facial recognition. And it says, oh, you don't have to do this. This is just a test. But meanwhile, everyone's like, oh, whatever. I'm good. I'm doing the facial recognition. So there's this bipartisan group of 12 senators, some heavy hitters in there, Cruz, of course, but, some Elizabeth Warren, and they don't want it. They want this to stop. And I think that this is a setup for them to say, well, this lady snuck onto the plane. It could have done anything. We need facial recognition. I think that's what you see come out of this.
That's an interesting thesis.
And that's what I think is coming out of this. And it really is such an invasion that they just throw this stuff up and, they say, you can opt out if you want to stand over here. That's how it goes now. Oh, you don't want to do facial recognition? Stand over here. And they make you wait. It's just like the naked body scanner, same thing. And then my final clip is from a compatriot, from a colleague of mine who is against the artificial intelligence hype. And he is he does the Primetime podcast, and he made such a good point on his podcast about artificial intelligence that I wanted to share it with the group.
Hear me out here. If these AIs were really that great, they're so great that they actually were AGI, they're able to learn, they're able to grow better. As Sam Altman once said, we're only a couple thousand days away from it. Bitch, that's like 10 years. Anyways, also, that's a crazy way to say that. Who describes time windows in days? Like, oh yeah, it's just like 3,600 days away. 10 years. You can just say 10 years and no one's upset at you, Samuel. It's strange. But anyways, but even if these companies do produce something that actually can really produce good code, you just got to understand something. Why would a company sell a product that can build anything? Why wouldn't they just harbor those trade secrets and build everything? Right? Like, why would you sell the infinite intelligence tool? Think about it for a couple. It makes no sense. Like, you would be able to compete with every product and start company after company after company after company over and over again. Having super AI would be the most valuable thing in the universe. So why ever would they just simply sell it? They wouldn't, because they'd be able to make everything.
I love that.
I do too.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you just keep it? If it's so good at coding and you can create every single product, Just put in some stuff there. Give me a new, spreadsheet program. It would be great.
Yeah. And you could tell it not to copy any of the other code that's already been used, so they can't get sued.
What do you mean? It's all copied. That's all they have.
Well, I mean, there are certain.
What are you eating?
I'm sorry. I'm having a lozenge. I'm going to be. You want me to cough?
Well, you do. Just asking. I didn't know. I said, what are you eating?
Now I have to snap. I mean, you made me snap.
Okay, boom. I was looking for that one. Good one.
No, I think you're completely correct here. This is, or that guy is.
Yeah, new
with this theory.
Yes.
That's, I don't want to use, I don't want to use Facebook. Make me a Facebook.
I love that guy.
It does art.
Yeah, really well too.
Not God's art, like you say, but
it's
art.
Oh, there it is. No, I didn't say God. Waited for a half hour. Oh yeah, that's it. That's all right, John. You will reap what you sow.
Well, right. I'm going to reap half of what I sow.
Yes.
In so far as these donations are concerned, which are low today again.
Well,
for Thursday, you know, we only have a total of 34 donors for this segment, and it's not.
I don't know what to say, man. I don't know what to say.
Beth Elliott starts us off. That's what you can say.
All right.
She's in Corytown, Tennessee. Comes with $133.69. Ryan Newman in Yankton, South Dakota. His name, he says, Kyle Tack, as he loves that, introduced me to No Agenda. He's my favorite, blah, blah, blah. Does he get a call? No.
Okay.
It's a biscuit for his birthday, maybe. Happy birthday to Kyle.
Oh, I wasn't ready with a biscuit. Hold on a second.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, but I got a biscuit. I always have a biscuit somewhere.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
There's your biscuit.
And he's $111.11 from him. Baron Surfer, S-I-R-F-E-R, in Shasta Lake. $100.33. Baron Latikin, there he is in Houston, Texas. We remember him.
Mm-hmm.
$100. You remember him.
Remember?
John Robinet, $100. Kevin McLaughlin is up there already at 8008. He's the Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs. Eric Adler in Punta Gorda, Florida, 8008. This set of boobs makes me a baron, he writes.
All right.
William Arcand in Bedford, New Hampshire, 7770. Baron Sir Lineman of the Net in Anna, Illinois, 5678. It was a happy birthday call out to Josie. Sir Dre in Noorn, Holland. Is that right? Dorn.
Yeah, this is another Dorn. This is another one on behalf of Sir Dre, the knight of the empty PayPal, who has the broken brain. And that's why he donated $22.22 on his request, asked for a health karma, adding €33.33 to level it and cover the PayPal costs. Sir Dre, the knight of the empty PayPal and the broken brain, perseveres and promotes the No Agenda formula along among the staff of the Recovery Center and Rehabilitation Center in Groesbeek. He is proud to mention he has already hit some nice nurses and therapists in the mouth. And we have a slogan here. Listening to the No Agenda podcast keeps you sane and ensures that you don't lose the half of the brain that's left. That's from Hus Cadaver.
You snorted.
I did.
Wow.
All right.
That's a first.
Maybe.
Brian Furley in 50. Yes, he's in 5510. Heather Harper in Lubbock, Texas, 5330. How far is Lubbock from you?
That's not close. Lubbock's quite a ways away. Yeah.
Michael Gates, 5280. Stefan Trockels in Soest, Deutschland, 5280. We talk about Uber's peak pricing on New Year's. 5X, 10X, too many X.
I have no idea what that's about.
I don't know. He's rambling. Another Mike Benz on our hands. John Bausano in Madison, Alabama, 5272. Hold on a second. There we go. Roger Keys in Holland, Michigan, 5272. Sir D.H. Slammer, haven't heard from him for a while. He's in Buellton, California, 5271. He says he's not overboard, just hanging out in the galley.
All right.
Foster Birch is New York City, and he comes with 50. These are all 50s now, and I'm going to just do the name and location. Daniel LeBoy in Bath, Michigan. Matt Frazee in St. John's, Florida. James Sharametta in Napanock, New York. Michael Chauvin, PLC, in Saginaw, Michigan. Chris Conacher in Anchorage. Alex Zavala in Kyle, Texas, or Kylie?
Kyle.
Kyle, Texas. Brenton Gray in Warrinoola, New South Wales. Listening to your show from down under. Get some more people to listen. Kenneth Fry in Irving, Texas, $50. And he says his freeloader days are over, value for value. If he's a freeloader, he needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And that's it. That's our group, short group today, small group today. It helps make show 1518 a reality.
1718, no less.
Yeah, I'm off 200.
Thank you.
So is the donors.
Thank you to our supporters, our producers for today. We appreciate it. Time, talent, or treasure. NoAgendaDonations.com. Never under 50 is mentioned for reasons of anonymity. There are always some joker in there with $49.99, but we understand. And of course, the sustaining donations. Any amount, any frequency, it helps a lot. And of course, with that, you can eventually get to knighthood as well. We have lots of layaway nights. NoAgendaDonations.com. Again, that is NoAgendaDonations.com. Here's a card. Good gratuitous for those who need it.
You've got karma.
NoAgendaDonations.com. Shortlist, Ryan Newman says happy birthday to Kyle. Celebrated yesterday, Ranger Becky wishes her best buddy and brother, Sergeant John McKeon, a happy birthday. He turns 43 tomorrow. And Baron Sir Lineman of the Net wishes Josie Hawkins a happy birthday. We say the same thing. Happy birthday on behalf of everybody here. The best podcast in the universe. It's your birthday. Two title changes today. We have Sir Eric now becoming a Baron. Sir Eric, Baron of the Fat Point. Who doesn't know it? And Sir Derek, Protector of Star Lake, now becomes Baronet Sir Double Dr. Derek. And that is correct that he is a double doctor because he also gets a Doctor of Science today. So, Sir Derek, please step right up. Remember to go to noagendarings.com to give us the exact name you want on your Doctor of Science specializing in climate change studies. Congratulations with your doctor. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. noagendarings.com. And you can also go to noagendarings. Oops. Oh, the title change. You can also go to noagendarings.com to take a look at those handsome knight and dame rings if you're interested in one of those. We didn't have anyone interested today, but eventually someone will get back at the round table. Very excited to see it.
No Agenda Meetups.
Yeah, we're into the holiday session of the meetups. Means a lot
Christmas
of meetups.
Parties where you drink too much.
That's right. Got a note here from Sir Brian with a Y. He said, money's super tight for me lately, but I organize a meetup on Saturday, the 7th of December in Aurora, Illinois. I normally promote my meetups with a donation. Adam is normally fantastic with promotions, but hasn't mentioned this one yet. Hopefully he mentions it on tomorrow's show. Well, here I am.
It's your fault, Trump.
Could he get a note to make sure he mentions it? Well, the back office functions perfectly. Our meetup is this Saturday on the 7th of December in Aurora, Illinois at Two Brothers right outside of Chicago. I only have like one RSVP. We normally get 10 to 15. It's on the meetup site. Thank you for your courage, Sir Brian with a Y. Well, you've got your promotion there. And before we move on, here is a report from the South Dakota meetup.
Hey, this is John of the Dale coming to you from Crow Peak Brewing here in Spearfish, South Dakota. Beautiful sunset. If you didn't find us, maybe we were out on the balcony watching the sunset over Crow Peak here in Northwest South Dakota in the morning.
In the morning, John and Adam. This is Caitlin, and Casey's the spook.
In the morning, John and Adam. I am not the spook. Thank you very much.
In the morning. Happy Thanksgiving and hope to see you in December. Crow Peak.
In the morning.
A lot of girls there. Let's see. Today we have the 805 Rooftop Meetup. It's underway at Goleta HGI Rooftop in Goleta, California. No, not yet. Two more hours before it kicks off. The Outer Swamp Meetup at 6 o'clock at Java Nation, Rockville, Maryland. So you want to go check that one out. You can get there in time. No problem. We have the Northern Wake Publical Slave Gathering at 6 o'clock at Hoppy Endings in Raleigh, North Carolina. The Gitmo Brats and Festive Hats, 6:30 at Jackson's Cozy Lounge in Gladewater, Texas. The No Agenda Lowlands Wageningen Economic Food Hub, That's WEF meetup. Bitterballs and croquettes galore. Ah, as Tina would say, that's brain matter that's fried. 7 o'clock Amsterdam time. That's tomorrow. Stadsbrouwerij in Wageningen. Guus Cadaver, who donated earlier for our broken brain night, will be hosting that. On Saturday, the meetup at Mimsy's, 11:30 in the morning. Mimsy's Coffee and Curiosities in Rogersville, Alabama. The Boners and Donors meetup at 1 o'clock on Saturday at Mac Daniels Island on Daniel Island. That's not downtown. That's Daniel Island, South Carolina. Saturday as well, the west coast of Florida, 5 p.m. Eastern. Three Daughters Brewing in St. Pete, Florida. The North Carolina Triad No Agenda meetup, 2 o'clock Eastern. Little Brother Brewing, formerly Kernersville Brewing Company in Kernersville, North Carolina. The ITM from New Mexico. This is a brand new one for Jeff Tuhig. Please go check him out in Albuquerque, New Mexico at Sawmill Market, 2 o'clock on Saturday. The local 406 Chicken, Beer, and Vinyl, 3:30 on Saturday at Hop Lounge in Bozeman, Montana. These are some good parties. Real Fox Valley Meetup, number 5, 3:30 at Two Brothers Roundhouse in downtown Aurora, Illinois. That's across from the Haitians. And Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, Meetup, 4:33 at Johnny's Canuck Bar and Grill, Crown Point Center in Orléans, Ontario, Canada. And we have a promo from the folks there at West Palm Beach, Florida. They produce a lot. Come on in.
By order of His Grace the King and the First Men, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm, you are cordially invited to a game of axes and knives if you dare. On Sunday, the 15th of December, a king's feast will be served all across the land of West Palm Beach, Florida. But knights and dames, please beware. Winter is coming, so you must RSVP to be there. We'll drink and we'll throw things.
Those guys really get into it.
Yeah, Shades of the Renaissance Fair.
There you go. Have a good time there and check out all of the No Agenda meetups. They're at noagendameetups.com. This is the perfect time to go and join in some festivities and merriment right around the holidays. Noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. You can still do it in time.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. Triggered or held to blame. You wanna be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
Yeah, baby. Like a big party. All right, John Sip of the Day is coming up. And,
hey, by the way, I might mention something else Brunetti had to say. He said that you left out Hookers and Blow and Rent Boys and Chardonnay on the last nighting, and he thinks that you're going to change it for good.
No, did I really miss that?
Well, he claims. He says, "What good is being a knight?"
I certainly wouldn't have left that out on purpose.
I think
I've been adding cigars and prostitutes, in fact, as an addition. Since that came up.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I've been doing that for the past couple of shows. I will double check on this. That's it. Any other notes?
Any other notes from the producers?
Any other notes?
From the suits.
Right? I mean, we do a podcast, so we don't have to do that. Now we get Brunetti. Donates twice in his life, and now he thinks he can say something just because he let you drive the fire engine?
Yeah, well, you know, I signed off on it.
Screw this Hollywood douche. What's he trying to do to us? He's trying to rip us apart.
He's turned into a suit.
He is a suit. He's a suit. He's got a cyber truck and a suit. Enough said. All right, Brunetti, email me.
How about a bonus clip?
Oh, you got a bonus clip. Okay. Yeah, that's always fun.
It's under TPK, but it should say talk. This was
I talk. Oh,
this is lesbian Joe Pesci. And the reason it's called this is because this woman is wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Wait a minute. Did talking about Brunetti make you come up with this?
No, I'm going over the list here. I saw it and I said, well, I should get this out of the way because people love these talk clips.
Yes, they encourage you. Yes, they do.
This is the, yes, they do.
They encourage
people. That's exactly what they do.
Yeah, that's happening.
And you hate it. I know that. I can tell. So hate this is a woman, word. A woman who looks like Joe Pesci is the reason that it was called that. And she's on a rant. She's ranting against you MAGA nuts.
This is a message for any MAGA cultist that knows me, that is in my family, that used to be, and I mean used to be my friend. If you are a MAGA cultist, if you follow and or support the orange shit turd, I want no part of you. I don't care if you are my niece, my nephew, my cousin, my siblings, my parents, my kids. I don't care who you are. If you support this clown, we are not friends. We are not family any longer because you just supported someone against my rights and the rights of people that I love. If I work with you, I have to be professional and I have to speak with you professionally at work so that I don't lose my job. However, make no mistake, if you support him, I will never be your friend. We would never be friends out of work, and I will never respect you. That's all I have to say.
Now, is you play this because you think this is funny?
I think it's pathetic.
I think it makes me very sad.
But I'd like to know, you know, it's always about me, me, me. It's like, you voted for him against me.
Yes,
the Democrats. And my rights. Yes. Where are they getting this? So you had this earlier in the show, you had this rundown of these complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was emphasized enough about these people taking this personally as this somehow their rights are being attacked. And if you voted for Trump, you voted against them personally.
Our university system, our entire education system, and whoever has been our pharmaceutical system, whoever has been meddling inside the brains of people through social media, have created a massive group of people with narcissistic personality disorder, because that's what this is. And to add to that, when you accuse someone of being a narcissist, which these people have accused Trump of being, then there's a pretty good chance that you're accusing someone of that of what you are yourself. These are narcissists. It is now a mental disease. And these people need a hug. They need to be loved and not excoriated.
Well, I think that's very, very magnanimous of you.
Magnanimous?
Yeah, magnanimous.
What does that mean in this context?
It means you're a good guy.
Yeah, I don't want...
Personally, yeah.
Well, maybe...
I'm not hugging these people, that's for sure.
Maybe if I'd seen the Joe Pesci look, I would have thought differently about it. But this is why I don't like these clips, because you can't see these people.
You admit it, you don't like the clips. You heard that, people. Send him a note, Adam at curry.com.
I'm gonna have Brunetti.
We want more clips.
I'm gonna have Brunetti send a note to you. Yeah, John. I really don't think that these TikTok clips are any good because we can't see them, so we don't get all the context after you've seen them. Anyway,
I explained the context. I can explain. I know how to.
So
do
what
that.
Time did Brunetti send out the Zoom call invite so we all get on the call at the same time for us to berate us about how we're doing
for the
show
meeting?
For the meeting? I'm not doing
post-mortem
any
meeting.
All right. What are your ISOs?
Okay, I got. What do you got?
I'll play mine. I have two.
These old guys who say something stupid.
That's us.
And here,
they're like, "Well, I was on a podcast."
I can't even understand that.
Okay. All right.
So I have two that are pretty clear, I think.
Okay. All right.
Start with free.
And it's free.
Oh, that's kind of nice because it is free. That's good. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. It's free.
And the other
and
one?
Then the end.
And that is the end of the podcast.
No, no. That one wins hands down. Or we could do a double. I'm actually thinking I think.
And that is the end of the podcast.
And it's free.
How about that? I like the double. Yeah. I like, we're going for the double. Everybody, it's time once again for John's tip of the day.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB.
And sometimes Adam.
I have this is a sometimes moment. I have a tip. If you don't mind, I'd like to give a little tip. This comes from our producer, Fielding E. Fowler, and this is a tip for parents. And I'm going to read it. My wife and I have a tip for you. We have two very active human resources and often can't wait to see the school bus drop the other kids on the block home from school. We homeschool, and when they leave the house to go play, they take a small walkie-talkie with them instead of a phone. It works great. We can call them home when dinner is done, and they can call if they need help. No screen and no internet. One of the other families gave their 8-year-old a cell phone, and what do you know? It's never charged, and the screen is busted. All the other families are jealous because we are smarter than them. We are using our no-agenda intelligence. I think that's a great idea. And you know what? It's cool. I think if you give your kid one of those GPRS, is it GPRS? GRPS? No. One of those walkie-talkies that has you know, a decent range.
They have a pretty good, some of them have a big range for they run a C-band or something, CB band or one of these.
No, things. It's not CB. Sure. No, it's like 145 megahertz or something.
Well, they go about a mile.
Yeah, at least. And then, you know, the kid can hook it on their belt. Yeah, they're rugged.
Got it on his belt. He looks like a mall cop,
and could just say, hey, mom, you know, like, yes, can you have some chocolate milk ready for me? And of course, the moms would say, sure, no problem. The kids will be like, that's so awesome. I like this tip. I think it's a great tip. You can buy them on Amazon for about $20 for a pair.
They're pretty cheap. Made in China. Get them now before the price goes up.
That's right.
All right, so we got a guy in the medical industry, or he's in the billing thing. He knows he's a long story. The backgrounder is good on this. Is another tip from a fan.
What are we, the Tim Pool show now? What is this? What is this fan business?
I hate to burst your bubble. he was just, this is basically a bitch letter about Andreessen. But at the end, he has a tip of the day.
Oh, this is the one about how we lost $7,000?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you didn't get that note.
I do recall something about $7,000, but that's not this note.
Do you want me to just mention this guy's note real quick? Just
What's his name?
His name is, let me see. His name is, I think I omitted his name probably, Sean.
Oh, yeah, this is David.
It's not the same guy. Anyway, Sean said that he lost $7,000 due to Synapse Technologies declared bankruptcy, which was the very fintech that Mark Andreessen funded. And those guys said, oh, we don't have any money to make everybody whole. He has a whole long story about it. I'll put it on the...
Oh, jeez, I don't remember. Now you think... it's terrible.
Yeah.
So okay, this is the tip of the day for medicine, people without insurance or with insurance.
Okay.
Tip of the day, if you don't have insurance, call up the medical facility and ask for the cash rate.
Ah, yes.
They may push back, but most will provide you with a charge that is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, that lower than you would have to pay with your insurance plan. We've talked about this in great detail in the show.
Yeah.
About how they jack it up, and they have all these phony numbers, and that what you pay is actually more than anybody pays. But if you go for the cash rate, it might actually be cheaper. The real tip is you must say that you do not have insurance coverage, or else they will be obligated to charge you the insurance rates.
There you go.
I found that to be a tip.
Well, that's a tip plus. This is exactly what Crowd Health does. That's what Tina has. I think she pays $200 a month. And if something comes up, and I think anything under $500 she pays for herself, anything over that, she submits it to them. It's not an insurance plan. It's more like a layaway plan. And then they go to the doctor, hospital, et cetera. They say, hey, no insurance. And they negotiate the cash price, and then they crowdfund it from the money they already have. That's why it's called Crowd Health. It's very good. She's had a lot of success with it, loves it. And email Tina at curry.com, and she'll send you a coupon, a code.
Wow.
That's your tip of the day, everybody. Yeah, there you go. Tipoftheday.net.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB.
And sometimes Adam.
Man, we're just over tip these days. People get so much benefit. And you can go to tipoftheday.net or noagendafund.com to revisit these. They're good tips, people. It's worth hanging out till the end of the show to get them. And with that, we will be returning on Sunday. So a lot going on. The oil barons coming to stay for a day with us. So I'm sure I'll have lots of oil barony type news. I'm excited. And we'll be back on Sunday with more media deconstruction for your pleasure. End of show mixes, Leo LePuke, who's still hanging in there. We're happy to hear that. Sir Aaron Yoho and Judd Haley, all with end of show mixes. And up next on noagendastream.com, trollroom.io, Random Thoughts, the Democrat discount. That is from the show that just aired yesterday. So stay tuned for that. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, right here in Fredericksburg, Texas. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain, I'm John C. DeVore.
Please remember us at noagendadonations.com. Help the show out. Keep us rolling. Time, talent, treasure. Until Sunday. Adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
I said I'd abide by the jury decision. I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
I could speak for the president, and he said he would not pardon his son.
Is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No, I just said no.
When would the president pardon or commute his son if he's convicted?
So I've answered this question before. It was asked of me not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and I was very clear and I said no.
Nobody can do the pardon like I do. Oh, yeah.
I will not pardon him.
The president would not pardon or commute the sentence for his son, Hunter. I just want to make sure that that is not going to change over the next 6 months.
It's still a no. It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. Will he pardon his son? No.
I like the term security neighborhood. What's going on in your neighborhood? Security neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Ukraine's not in the EU. They're not in NATO.
No.
They're just in around the corner. They're over there.
In the neighborhood.
And in the security neighborhood.
Yes.
And they...
What's going on in your neighborhood? In the neighborhood.
In the security neighborhood. These guys, they see Trump coming in to stop this war. And they're now. But what are we going to stop it for? We can come up with $200 billion of our money, of our stupid taxpayer money that we have at our disposal. They don't want peace.
That lady was right.
It's just like Usenet.
We're two old boomers.
It's just like Usenet.
What's that thing we all text each other in a little message group? Yeah, we're two old boomers.
You talked about earlier, the groups, these little groups that you write notes to each other.
The text group.
It's just like Usenet.
The text group. The text message group. That lady was right.
You don't even know what a text message group, X message group is.
That lady was right.
It's just like Usenet.
We're two old boomers. Text group. Yes, it's called the text group. The New York Times now calls women non-transgender women.
I think these women are weak-minded. It's just like Usenet.
The best podcast in the universe.
Adios, mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
And that is the end of the podcast.
And it's free.
I mean, you made me snap. It has to be compromised. Lunatic this guy is. Yeah, yeah. Disease, famine, pestilence.